Hey everybody, welcome again to another episode of F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley and I'm very excited for this week's show. It is our annual post-flashback horror con show. So as always, I'm joined for this very special episode by Adam Risky. Hi, Adam.
Hi. My hypnosil is about to kick in. I'm sorry.
We will also be talking about Freddy vs. Jason this episode.
15-year anniversary in 2 weeks.
And kind of dovetails into some of the flashback weekend.
Dugtails?
Dugtails. Woo.
Ooh.
So we're going to be talking about flashback. We're going to be talking about Freddy vs. Jason.
Mm-hmm.
But first.
Yeah.
Adam.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything good lately?
I have. So I got that. I got that AMC Stubbs A-list, and it's awesome.
You're on the A-list, baby.
I'm on the A-list.
Were you able to painlessly cancel MoviePass?
It took me a few attempts.
Okay.
And then
I realized what I
found out, though, was it wasn't some kind of nefarious plot to make things difficult. Because when I kept trying to cancel, it would kick me out of the app. And I'm like, clever girl. But what it was I didn't have the latest update. And then when I updated the app,
then I could cancel. That's crazy.
Yeah, they're a real interesting bunch.
It was an interesting experiment. It paved the way to something better.
Yes, and thank you to them for the 1 year of saving me lots of money.
Absolutely,
at the movies.
Yeah,
I don't know. It was like this abusive relationship where they just take more and more things away from you.
And you have them to thank for Gotti.
Yes. Yes.
And something else. Didn't they produce something else?
American Animals?
Yeah, I didn't see that.
I didn't see that either. Okay. Yeah. But Gotti, probably one of the 50 best movies of the summer.
So what have you seen now that you're on the A-list?
So I saw this took two trips to finish, but I saw Skyscraper
okay.
in its entirety.
Yes.
So I went to see it in the Dolby Cinema, and that was my first time trying the A-list thing out. So it was more just to try the process. I just wanted to understand the process. And then I was in the Dolby Cinema, and the Dolby Cinema doesn't do Skyscraper any favors because it looks like a Redbox movie.
Yes.
And the special effects are hot garbage, and I'm convinced that The Rock does all the fire effects in his garage because, I don't know, I'm sure that there's a lot of talented FX artists, but he hasn't met any of them at social gatherings because shit special effects follow him like moths to a flame. So the movie is really terrible. The first half hour is worse than like the last hour and change, but the only thing that got me through it was Neve Campbell.
Okay.
Because Neve Campbell is not in a lot of mainstream movies anymore. So seeing her in this movie just elevate every scene was really great.
And who is she playing in the movie?
She's his wife.
Naturally.
But she gets stuff to do. They're like consciously not making her Bonnie Bedelia. They're like making her have some kind of agency within the action sequences. But they give her like a really convoluted history. They're just like, oh yeah, she used to be like a naval surgeon and also commando. So it's naturally. It was the two things that drove me the most nuts about Skyscraper. One is, in order to get, so the bad guys don't want his family involved. They're trying to frame him, so it becomes like Die Hard with a framing.
Yeah.
But they want the family to like go off of the skyscraper, or leave the skyscraper, so they're not in harm's way.
Do they say skyscraper a lot?
I don't think they do.
Okay.
Yeah. Kudos to the screenwriters. The whole conceit to get them off is they're just like, we're taking the kids to the panda exhibit. And it's like, what's Chinese? Pandas.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, we got you the special bracelets for the after hours feeding.
What?
And I'm just like, don't they just feed when they want to?
Nope.
Nope. It's like an ultimate package at flashback weekend. And then they're like giving the kids like panda hats. I'm like, this is one step too far. Like, we don't need the panda hats too. So there's that. But the God's awfulest, worstest thing about Skyscraper is, okay, he's doing what he needs to do to save his family. He's climbing up like adjacent ladders and construction rigs to get to the building so he can do that thing from the preview where he's jumping.
I saw the trailer once and I was like, so it's Die Hard with CGI,
it's
and like a robot
Inferno,
leg.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So like there's all that, but a crowd is watching him do all this stuff mm-hmm. and cheering mm-hmm. when he makes it and mm-hmm. does stuff because mm-hmm. there's a giant LCD TV mm-hmm. showing a news feed. Mm-hmm. And they're watching all this. Mm-hmm. But the thing that's weird is, like, there's several times where he's, like, inside and outside of the building where, like, he has to, this total ripoff of Die Hard where there's, like, a reason why he has to get off this one floor and then he has to scale down to another floor and stuff. But they just, like, stick around. It's not like, oh, he made it in the building. Now right. let's go have dinner. It's like, oh, he made it in
they
the building.
See how it plays
let's
out.
Hang out right. just in case there's a bottom of the eighth and, like, something really develops and... It's not good. It's not a good movie.
This is great because I was never going to see it.
Yeah.
And now I'm for sure never going
to
see it.
Yeah. The Rock is, he needs to work with better directors.
This is the San Andreas guy, right?
No, it's the Central Intelligence and Dodgeball guy.
Oh.
Rampage was the San Andreas guy. He only works with two directors.
Okay.
Ross and Marshall Thurber.
Ross and Marshall Thurber, who also made We're the Millers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when you need action... You get the guy who made Weird.
I don't think
Millers.
I realized he did Central Intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Brad Peyton's the other guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
These are pairings I'm not interested in.
No.
When The Rock works with these directors, I'm less interested.
And I'm just tired of, he's good in it, but it's a terrible movie.
Right.
Because he's got enough power where he could find better movies
yeah.
to be in. But I read there's like an article on Slash Film where he dictated like how Rampage was going to end because he's very aware of his... He sounds like Will Smith 2.0,
right,
where he's
right.
very aware right. of his global branding, and he's like, this is what I deserve to give my audience and stuff like that. It's just like, why don't you just like let a storyteller tell a story and be at service to that? So anyways.
All right.
I saw The Equalizer 2.
Yes.
And I liked it a lot.
All right.
And
let everyone know, where do you stand on Equalizer 1?
It's not good.
No.
Equalizer 1 is like... a pilot for an NBC drama mixed with Home Alone in a Home Depot. And it's shit. Although I did watch it before I saw Equalizer 2 on FX.
Okay.
And for
the
some reason,
to be seen.
I think FX elevates movies.
No.
I think they do. I don't know what it is. Like whenever I watch like the last 15 minutes of a movie before Atlanta starts or something, I'm just like, this is pretty good. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know why I was so hard on The Equalizer. So I watched that like the first or the night before, and then like I went to see The Equalizer 2 in IMAX, and
naturally,
yeah, because you got to use the A-list to your full advantage.
Yeah, that's true.
So I had zero expectation of it. They definitely scaled this one down. It's much more of like a 90s action movie, like a Nowhere to Run type thing.
All right.
It gets ridiculous in the end because it's like a fight in a hurricane and stuff like that.
You lost me.
But there's two scenes in this movie. You know how like you can watch a movie and it's like, okay, or pretty good. But then there's like a couple of scenes and like those are the things that kind of like put it over the hump for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So The Equalizer 2 has a couple. Like one, it's a very Denzel-y moment where he's yelling at a kid who's like a potential gangbanger, but he's trying to make sure that he is not going to go down that road.
Mm-hmm.
But you expect it to be like Denzel going like, I don't want you to go down that path, like it leads to nowhere, it's no good, like, you know, listen to me, learn from me and everything like that. But instead he's just like, come on big shot, here's the gun, come on killer, come on, come on. And it's like total Alonzo Harris.
Got it.
And it's amazing.
All right.
And then there's like, I've noticed, okay, I'm glad I'm talking to you about this because it's a heavy action trope that I love.
All right.
I apparently really, really love any action movie scene where it's the good guy and the bad guy and they're chatting it up before they schedule the time that they're going to kill each other.
Okay.
And it's like a bunch of like posturing.
Yep.
So The Equalizer 2 has one of those. And it reminded me kind of like of... like Vivica Fox and Uma Thurman or
right,
like Pacino
sure.
and De Niro and Heat and stuff like that. I just really love scenes like that. And this one is like acted by Denzel Washington. So he's like full on bravado. It's like not that. That's the thing I liked about this one. He wasn't as kind of, I don't know how do you put it? Like it's like kind of taciturn almost, or like stiff. Because in the first one, he's like stoic.
He was like sad David Banner Hulk from the Bill Bixby show.
And in this one, he kind of like goes a little fences more.
He goes full Ferrigno.
Yeah, yeah. So I enjoyed it, and I was relieved that JB liked it too, because that gave me permission to like it. Because otherwise I was on the fence.
I will see it.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. And then I watched Unfriended Dark Web.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as good as the first Unfriended, but I didn't think it was as bad as a lot of people seem to think. This one's interesting because, like, the first one, it's a lot of kids who did something really bad and kind of deserve to be punished in some way for what they did.
Right.
And it's like a vengeful ghost. And this one's not a ghost, but these people really didn't do anything all that bad. So it's a little bit more of an icky feeling. But I think if you like VHS and VHS 2, it felt more like a VHS movie than the first Unfriended.
All right.
So
I don't know where that puts me.
It's not like misogynistic, but it's just kind of more kind of nihilistic, I think.
Okay.
So I appreciated just it being tense the whole way through and just kind of going for it. And then when I was in the theater, like tons of teenagers kept like a group of like 15 teenagers kept sneaking in, and then like ushers would come in and kick them out, and then they would sneak back in, and then ushers would come in and kick them out. And this happened like twice during the movie, and it somehow made the movie more tense for me because like I was affected by what was going on screen.
Sure.
But then like it was like the tinglers in the theater. It's so
how insane that they had such resolve to see Unfriended 2 or Unfriended Dark Web.
Yeah, like it was $5 Tuesday, so I don't know.
You give it a shot, maybe, and if they throw you out, you're like, all right,
They're like, you can't put us in Skyscraper.
I guess we got to go see Skyscraper,
And I saw Sorry to Bother You, and that was better than I thought it would be. I was a little bit not very excited about it in the first place because I'm not a big satire guy. Like, I always understand what they're going for and that the excess is the point, but the excess just puts me off, and I just can't really... it's like I understand it, but it just doesn't do anything for me as an experience. But this one felt more like Mad TV skits. It gets, like, really weird, and I really liked the way that it got weird.
Okay.
It was better than I thought it would be.
I really want to see it. It's down to like maybe one show a day or no shows a day. So
there wasn't a lot of people.
I may have
there
to wait for VOD.
There's one word I want to talk to you about within Sorry to Bother You, but I have to wait until you see it.
Well, thank you.
But yeah, it's when I saw it, I was just like, that's something I could say to Patrick.
Oh, all right.
It would make total sense.
I'm excited.
And then, of course, Mission Impossible Fallout.
Is that your last one?
That's the last
one. Okay, so I'll pick up there.
Okay. All I'll say about it is I don't know if it's my favorite Mission Impossible movie, but it's got some of the best scenes, I think, in the entire series in it. And that helicopter sequence.
Yeah, that was
cool. Like, I was giggling because, like, I couldn't believe some of the shots that I was seeing. Like, it was unbelievable. And then I thought the villains were better than they typically are in the series. And I don't know. I'm noticing kind of how I feel about the Mission Impossible formula now, because I think you had mentioned it on the Ghost Protes show that it's almost like the plot is a clothesline for the action sequences.
Yes.
And I struggle with the in-between scenes because they're just not... I don't know. I just don't have... I don't dislike the characters, but I just don't feel as drawn to them as I do maybe some characters in other franchises.
They're barely characters.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's like you're banking on just like the charisma of the actors.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, like, it's same thing with like Equalizer 2. Like, there's just something nice about a lead actor who's been doing it for a long time and they know what they need to do to be at service to the movie that they're telling. So they're like, okay, well, maybe I need to like amp this up or what. Or they're just so normally committed to, as you put one time, like dragging a movie to success. And I think Denzel usually is like that, and Tom Cruise is almost always like that. So, yeah, I mean, like, I really enjoyed it. I liked it a lot.
So how do you reconcile that with your feelings on, like, Skyscraper and Dwayne Johnson?
Because I don't think that he's trying to drag a film to success.
Okay.
No, I think he just cares about him looking good.
Okay.
And I think that he lets everything else almost maybe, and I'm being cynical, but, like, it's almost like he's wants things to look worse so that he looks better.
Interesting.
Because nobody else, like, really, if you look at, like, a Dwayne Johnson movie, with the exception of maybe, like, Jumanji or, like, one of the earlier Fast and Furious movies he was in, I mean, not a lot of people get their shine, so to speak, like, right, other than him.
It's a weird thing because I was a big fan of him early on. I thought he made movies better and he was fun to watch, and I still really enjoy Walking Tall, probably more so than The Rundown. I mean, The Rundown is fun, but Walking Tall, I was like, oh my gosh, it's
Walking
80.
Walking Tall is fun.
It's 80 minutes of him beating people up. I'm in. And then at a certain point, he started making bigger movies and, like you said, is playing a certain kind of part that's less fun for me now. And the movies that he makes are not really movies that I'm interested in. Maybe it's because he's working in, like, disaster movie genres that I don't care about.
Yeah.
I really did not like Rampage. Like, it's still one of my least favorite movies this year. I liked Mission Impossible Fallout a lot. I thought it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, the helicopter sequence alone, I think, is worth the price of admission. Did you see it in IMAX?
Yes.
I mean, that's...
It's top-notch.
If you see it in IMAX during two sequences, one is the Halo jump about a third of the way through the movie that's in a lot of the trailers, and then, again, during the helicopter sequence, it opens up to, like, the full IMAX, and it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I think a little bit it's a victim of my own excitement, because it was easily the movie I was most looking forward to this summer. I really liked this franchise. I've really liked the last two movies. And I didn't like it as much as either of the last two movies.
Okay.
And actually, for a while, I was like, I'm not even totally liking this in a lot of ways, like the first third, roughly.
Yeah.
The second half, I think, is a lot better and more fun, and maybe it's because it's kind of more backloaded with action.
Mm-hmm. Was it like pre- or post-motorcycle chase that you were feeling kind of not as on board with it?
No, I think it was, I mean, I feel like around the motorcycle chase is when I...
Okay.
Kind of got into it. I don't want to spoil anything, but at a certain point when they get the thing that they're trying to get, I feel like that's where the movie picks up speed.
Gotcha.
But there's a lot of stuff early on that I was just not into. It's a little bit darker. It doesn't have the same sense of fun for a lot of it.
It did have like that Hans Zimmer
thing.
You know?
Yeah. And Ghost Protocol, I mean, the thing that I like about it is just it's so fun. Mm-hmm. It just moves. And
weapons grade plutonium.
They kind of sideline Rebecca Ferguson, which is a real bummer after she was the highlight of the last movie.
Yeah, they do for quite a while.
Almost the whole thing, I would argue, but okay.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot of really, I mean, there's a bathroom fight that's awesome. The helicopter sequence is really, really fun. So I still obviously got my money's worth and still think it's a really good action movie. And if it falls short, I think it's only in comparison to the very high standards of the series. Because if I'm putting it next to, I haven't seen Skyscraper, but I think if I put it next to Skyscraper, I'll be like, well, this is a better movie.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you watch Skyscraper close to Mission Impossible Fallout, it's just so embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, Tom Cruise should sit down with The Rock and just be like, look, man.
It's
you're
so,
making us all look bad.
It's so bizarre, though, that in 2018, the impressive special effect, the brand, like the reason that we're going to see these movies, the way that they've set themselves apart is by really doing it.
Yep.
That now we've come full circle where that's the thing that's special instead of, oh, you can make buildings and robot legs and fires and whatever on computers. Like, who gives a shit about any of that? I want to see Tom Cruise hanging from a helicopter because that's amazing.
That's a development that I'm on board with for sure.
I wish it would happen more. I don't think it will.
This isn't one that I'll talk about because it's a movie that we've both seen and you've done a show on, but it's related to the Tom Cruise thing. So I watched like the last hour of Vanilla Sky on cable a few nights ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a weird relationship that with that movie. I go back and forth on liking it or not liking it.
That sounds about right.
At the end, when he jumps off the building for the lucid dream, he would have done that shit for real.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Like, he probably is kicking himself. He's just like, can we do a director's cut? Come on, Cameron.
I wonder, you know, when Henry Cavill signs on to be in the movie, do you think he's like, oh no, do I also have to do all this stuff because I'm acting opposite Tom Cruise, who insists upon it?
I don't know. He strikes me as the type of person who would want to do that stuff.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
I worry that Tom Cruise is going to die. Erica and I have this debate where she says he has a death wish, and I say, no, I think he loves life so much, I think he doesn't think he can die. And that's why he does this stuff. But I think he keeps pushing himself further and further because... Mm-hmm. That's what the audience is demanding. And when he comes out with The Mummy and it sucks and nobody likes it and it doesn't make money, it's like, well, I guess I gotta go extra hard on the next Mission Impossible.
I never feel like he's not completely wanting to do these things.
No, though. I don't like, either, but that's what I'm saying. Like, well, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Part of it, I think he's doing it as a way of staying on top.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing something that nobody else in his field will do.
That is a sad thing about his career, is that unless he's in a Mission Impossible movie, his movies don't really make that much money or like kind of cultural impact anymore.
No.
So it is weird. Like, it's definitely where he feels like he has to kind of up the stakes each time out to stay relevant.
Right.
You know, but, which is a bummer.
But it has worked. I mean, look at how these movies have set themselves apart, you know.
I need a Mission Impossible Fallout VR experience, because I am so on board with these new movie VR experiences.
Like, I haven't done any of them.
The It one was awesome.
That sounds too scary.
And
I'm a baby.
Yeah, my favorite part of the It one, and I've never told him this, but Rob kept his headset on for about a minute longer than I did because it was over, but he didn't know that it was restarting, so he kept like looking around and seeing Rob just kind of looking around inside like a bus with in a VR experience. It's adorable.
They need to stop posting photos of It Chapter 2.
Yeah,
because it's I'm having a hard time waiting.
I'm beside myself excited.
Every time they show Jessica Chastain on set, I'm like, I need this movie right now. And then they keep posting pictures of like her with Sophia Lillis. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? You need to stop it.
It's very exciting. But at least you got the Nun to hold you over.
Good point. So much It stuff, by the way, represented at Flashback. Like,
that's great.
So much Pennywise. So much It.
Yes.
A couple other new releases I'll talk about, since I guess that's the theme of this episode. I saw Hotel Transylvania 3.
I did too.
Summer Vacation. What'd you think?
This was the first Hotel Transylvania movie I've ever seen. Okay. Have you seen the other two?
I have.
All right, how's it compare to the other two?
Okay. They're all fine. Like, I thought it was fine. There were things I wasn't crazy about. Mm. I did laugh out loud.
Yeah, I did too a couple
probably
times.
Probably twice. Once was probably Chris Parnell.
Yes, the fish.
Yeah, and then once was when everyone figures out that Bob.
Which one's Bob?
The dog.
Okay.
Right? I think his name was Bob.
Yeah.
Like, he loses his hat, and then all of a sudden everyone's like, wait, Bob. You know, they realize he's not Bob.
Yeah.
I thought that was really funny.
I liked when the Steve Buscemi werewolf realized that there was daycare on the boat. I thought that was funny.
All of these movies are, like, fine. Like, they should be awful.
Yeah.
Because they're taking something that we love and adding Adam Sandler voices and his friends.
Yeah. I thought it was a lot more charming than I was expecting.
Yeah.
It was just really good-natured and pleasant.
Yeah.
I saw it with my family, and they dug it.
So. I also saw the first Purge.
Okay. I did not see that.
It's not very good.
Yeah.
I've more or less liked two of the three movies so far.
Mm-hmm.
I like Anarchy pretty enthusiastically. I thought Election Year was like half of an okay movie.
Yeah.
Still not on board with the first Purge movie. Not the first Purge, but the Purge.
I'm following you.
Great concept, I think. kind of lame execution, but I enjoyed Anarchy because they opened it up. Election Year tries to do a thing. It's half successful. I think, you know, having Frank Grillo as your action hero mm-hmm. goes a long way towards making me like it. Mm-hmm. This is the first one that's not directed by James Monaco.
Yeah.
Do I have his name right?
I think so. It's DeMonaco or Monaco. James, okay, it's one of those two.
Yeah. And I could tell watching it, I was like, wait, this is not great. It's just really heavy-handed, pretty poorly directed. Mm-hmm. Marissa Tomei, who's going to come up again in a minute, is maybe in like two scenes. Oh, so if you think you're seeing it for, and one of them is one of the worst green screen shots I've seen since Baywatch.
Ooh, it's The Rock's people.
Again, it's trying to make a point, and I admire the point that it's trying to make, but I think it does it really poorly. I think there are just some awful characters and performances. And it's so there's three examples of, and we're not going to get political here, but there are three examples lately mm-hmm. of references to kind of the current situation that we're in. We talked about one of them when we did Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom mm-hmm. because there's a weird throwaway to like, what a nasty woman. Okay. There's a Killers song that's been playing a lot. It's called Run for Cover. And at one point they say something about fake news. And every time it gets me mad. And not because it reminds me of our current predicament, but mm-hmm. because it's so sort of throwaway and blasé and casual about the way that it's co-opting something that I think is really troubling and serious. And I'm just not at a point where we can just toss it in as a pop culture reference, because it happens in the first Purge. At one point, a woman is running away from another character, and then they clearly ADR her going like, "You pussy grabbing motherfucker." Mm. And again, I'm just not, if you're not going to confront this thing head on, I don't think you're allowed to just take bits and pieces to suit your purpose and to be like, see, I'm political. Like, no, you're not. You're just reminding us of, anyway.
It's tough because you want to be, I guess, relevant to the era. But at the same time, I don't think that you can dive in, as you said, until you have some distance.
Or until you dive in. Like, if you're going to dive in.
Yeah.
Don't just dip your toe and be like, look, I'm relevant, and remind me of something awful.
Or you have to find a way to sort of merge it into your genre piece it's like, oh, I get the one-to-one, but it's not you saying fake news.
Exactly.
Or pussy-grabbing motherfucker or something like that. But then again, I mean, and I don't know. I don't see where in certain movies, like, I think the first Purge is just like, it's a political franchise, so I mean, like,
yeah, oh, for sure.
But if, and I don't have any opinion about the Killers, even though it's I don't know too many other songs other than their singles. But like with Jurassic World, it's like there's no reason.
Absolutely.
So why even bother?
Right. Yes.
Like that's
and that's kind of like the Killers. They're not a political band. It's just they throw in this kind of buzz phrase that we're all familiar with.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you don't get to do that.
Maybe they're doing their Green Day thing. Maybe they're in that phase.
Anyway, the last movie I'll talk about is not a new release. And mm-hmm. this is because last week I randomly started just rewatching a bunch of stuff that that I haven't seen in a while and just felt like watching. Usually I'm pushing myself to watch new stuff. But every once in a while I'm just like, you know what? I need to put on things that I know and that I like. So I rewatched The Whole Nine Yards. Are you a fan?
I only saw it once, but I didn't like it when I saw it.
Interesting. It was a long time ago.
She's not the... I mean, there's a lot of Bruce Willis and stuff. I like Matthew Perry in it around that time.
You might like it more than you remember. Okay. I'm a fan. Yeah. And another movie that will come up on a future podcast once you see it, Trial and Error. Mm-hmm. But I also randomly rewatched Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
Yeah.
With Marissa Tomei.
Yep.
It's not an easy movie to watch because mm-hmm. it's really dark.
Yeah.
Like, it only gets darker as it goes. But I guess I was just marveling at, I'm not saying anything that no one who likes movies doesn't already know. Mm-hmm. But in the last year, I've seen three or four or five Sidney Lumet movies or rewatched Sidney Lumet movies. And obviously, he's just a very good director, right? This is not news. But what he does better than almost any other director I can think of, particularly of his generation, is direct actors. Because I rewatched, or actually watched for the first time, Running on Empty when Brian Sauer was on, mm-hmm. and was like floored at how good the acting is in that movie.
Yeah.
And watching Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, which I believe he was in his mid to late 70s when he directed. And, I mean, that's a movie made by a 26-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
But the performances in that movie are so goddamn good. It's hard to pick a best Philip Seymour Hoffman performance, but, mm-hmm. man, that's in the running. He has a moment with Marissa Tomei about two-thirds of the way through the movie that is like... What amazes me about the movie is the way that it continues to reveal information as it goes, because you don't even fully understand the extent of the Philip Seymour Hoffman character until that scene with Marissa Tomei. You think he's motivated by one thing, mm-hmm. and as the movie goes and you learn about these people more and more, you realize he's motivated by something else entirely. Ethan Hawke doesn't have as much to do, but he's really good at the thing that he's asked to do.
Isn't he playing like a twitchy brother? Or like kind of a
not
loser,
twitchy,
like a loser brother.
Yeah, kind of.
That's the thing I remember most about it, because I did see it, but this was like when it first came on DVD,
yeah.
and I remember thinking it was good. I just have never gone back to it, and now it's been 10 years removed, so I just don't remember.
This is my first time since the theater,
okay. Yeah,
and it wasn't a movie. I don't even know why I own it. I think I got it like used at Blockbuster during one of their sales or something, yeah. because it's not a movie that I would see myself rewatching a lot, but
yeah.
again, it's nice to have a lot of movies, because when you feel like watching something, a mm-hmm. lot of times, hey, it's on your shelf. I recommend revisiting it.
Nice.
It's really something.
Is it a good Friday night double feature with the whole nine yards?
I mean, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Before Jimmy the Tulip Knows You're Dead.
I would do Trial and Error in the whole nine yards.
That would
be my favorite night ever.
Yeah. I think Rob would like The Whole Nine Yards because it's Jonathan Lynn, and his
yeah.
the two movies he was bouncing back and forth between for his favorite comedy. And I don't know if he even knew. I'm sure he knew this because he's a very
Isn't
smart
Trial
guy.
Trial and Error, Jonathan Lynn too.
Trial and Error and Clue was Man. One was Rob's other choice for comedy, and then My Cousin Vinny. It's all Jonathan Lynn.
Jonathan Lynn knows what's up.
He knows his way around a comedy.
I don't think I even realized when I rewatched those two comedies in the span of 2 days that the same guy made them.
Yeah. I'm almost certain. Yeah, because it's Jonathan Lynn for Whole Nine Yards, right? I thought it was.
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm 95% sure that you're
okay.
right.
Okay. Is Willis good in that? Is that when he was still trying?
He's kind of trying. Okay. He's okay. I mean, he's mostly there to be kind of menacing and just be Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Amanda Peet,
I remember
crushes
she was
kinda,
yeah, she like steals the movie
100%.
Yeah.
Especially in like 2000 or 2001 when that came out, cuz she's been in a lot of stuff since, and
yeah.
so we've seen a lot of her. At that time she wasn't as familiar. I mean, I knew who she was from some things, but mm-hmm. it was one of those like, "Oh my god, who is that?"
Yeah, isn't she kind of like more flighty than usual in this?
A little bit, just yeah, lighter.
Lighter, yeah, because she's usually... It's weird. It's a kind of a shame they like cast her as like a really severe type most
yes.
of the time.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah, and she's not in this.
Yeah.
It's a lot more fun.
That's cool.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's talk about Flashback before we get into Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah.
Flashback's two big movies this year. Every year they kind of build around a theme. So in the past they've done Scream. Last year it was all like Nightmare 4 and 5. They've done the Halloween movies. This mm-hmm. year the two big ones were Fright Night and Child's Play.
Yes.
Both directed by Tom Holland, who was there. The casts of both films were mostly there. Catherine Hicks was not for Child's Play.
Mm-hmm.
And
Chris
Sarandon, who
yeah.
is a key player in both movies, but sadly
oh, yeah,
was
yes,
not there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember the story about I'm not in this. Yes, you are.
Yeah.
You point to his name. What was his reaction?
It wasn't Fright Night. It was
no, I know it was
Bordello of Blood, but
I couldn't remember the last part of the story.
Okay,
so was it just like a shrug? Like, huh?
No. Yeah, so this was years ago. I drove to Louisville, I think. It was for a like Fright Fest or Fright Night Film Fest, something like that. It was a convention that they had there. And there was the Fright Night people were there. It was Ragsdale and Amanda Bierce and Chris Sarandon. So Chris Sarandon was at his table for whatever reason, just probably because it has the Crypt Keeper on the poster. I had a Bordello of Blood, double-sided, 27x40. Sure, I didn't pay more than $5 for it. I go to his booth. Give him the money, ask for his autograph and everything. And he goes, and I don't think he was kidding. I'm almost certain he wasn't kidding. He just goes, I wasn't in this. And then Amanda Bierce's table was right next to his, and I was the only person at either of their tables. And Amanda Bierce is like, was kind of chatting to both of us too at the same time. So it's like two for one.
Yeah, nice.
So she's just like, yeah, you were. Your name's right here. And she points to like the credits.
I forgot that Amanda Bierce jumped in.
Yeah. And she points to the credits on the poster, on the bottom of the poster. And then Chris Sarandon just goes, oh, so I was.
So I was. There it is. I always picture him saying it as Prince Humperdinck.
No, it did sound right, like that. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, and he's just like, run along
kind
now.
Of arch. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
And then I went to go talk to the little girl from The Crow.
For real?
Yeah.
I mean, cool.
Guess what she wrote?
It can't rain all the time.
Of course. yeah. But she...
So talk about your flashback experience this year.
I mean, it was fun. I don't know. I really like Child's Play and I really like Fright Night, but for whatever reason, these aren't movies that I feel autograph drawn to.
Sure. That makes sense.
So I got two autographs. I got Tom Holland was there because obviously he's the Chris Sarandon of the bunch pulling double duty. And my favorite movie of his, for whatever reason, even though I know it's not even close to being objectively the best, is Thinner. And I just really love Thinner. So I bought like a shitty reprint, 11x17, and I just went to go get it signed. And I didn't know what Tom Holland was going to be like. And I think that I thought that he was going to be more loquacious, maybe based on your interview with him.
Yeah.
But when I met him, I don't know, maybe he just wasn't in like the right mood or he was tired or something, but it was just a very ordinary experience. He wasn't mean, but it was or anything. But like I asked him a question about working with Dennis Franz on Psycho 2. And he basically said, he's just like, yeah, he was a really in demand actor at the time for a specific type based off of Blowout. And, you know, we hired him and he was great. And then it just writes to Adam, Tom Holland. And I'm like, okay, thanks. I'm like,
I still can't believe he didn't react to it being a Thinner poster. Cause I just have to believe.
Yeah.
It was 99% mm-hmm. Child's Play and Fright Night.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw people walking around with like beautiful posters with all the signatures and I was very jealous. You get a Thinner, you got to be like, oh, wow.
You would think so. I mean,
Langoliers.
Like, I wanted him to touch my face at least. Yeah,
something.
And just be like, thank you.
Right? I see you. I see you.
It's weird because when I was going around getting the Chris Sarandons and Rochelle Davises of the world's autographs, I don't know what happened in the years since, but I used to be a lot more comfortable like going to get autographs. And now I feel this enormous pressure to have a good experience.
Sure.
Because I know that it could turn into like a Bruce Campbell situation where I sort of regret it.
Yeah.
But I never really know what to say because sometimes I'll say like, oh, I really liked your work and stuff like that. But then it's all like me to them. And I feel like I'm not getting like a normal experience. It's just me like saying praise to someone.
Sure.
And then, I mean, like, I don't expect them to entertain me or anything, right. But like, I just don't know. And one thing I notice, and this is my trap, which I always go to, but it just leads to nowhere. It's always, what was it like to work with so-and-so? And I feel like that now that I think about it, it's not disrespectful, but they probably want to talk about themselves and their work more than like the person you would rather meet that they worked with.
I see what you're saying,
yeah.
But I also suspect that some of them are probably more comfortable talking about something like that than they are talking about their own work or just like having to accept praise, which I'm sure is just like, you say thank you. What else do you do? You know, yeah. So in some ways, I'm sure it's like nice to be able to talk about. I totally understand what you're saying, where it's like, oh, no, what if they feel like I'm just mm-hmm. wanting to get to that person, but I have to put up with you because you're here.
Yeah. And then I'm really bad at openers, too, with mm-hmm. these people. So, like I said, Hi, Mr. Holland.
How you sleeping? Hi, Mr. Holland is fine.
I don't know.
That works. What are you going to say? Hi, Tom.
I think I have said that to people before.
I think that's weird.
Yeah, because it's assuming familiarity when there is
none. And I hear people do it all the time when I listen to like movie podcasts and they're talking about, you know, actors and directors.
That
and like calling
bugs
them
me
by,
too.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like, my workaround is just to always say their first and last name. So my workaround would be like, hi, Tom Holland.
Yeah. Interesting. So I met him.
Which is just as weird, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. It's charming. So there was that. And then you had mentioned to me, we were just hanging around at, so Heather, our friend Heather Wixon had a booth and we were spending time there most of the weekend. That was kind of like our congregation area and it was great and it was fun. And you had mentioned Fiona Dourif is only $25. And I was just like, holy cow, that's cool. Because a lot of, you know, like some of the Jasons were like 40 each. And I was just like, that's banana pants. So, so when you mention it was 25, it like went from, I don't really want it, to like, oh yeah, for sure. So I get over to her table and she has those pop vinyl figures. And she had one, it was a Child's Play 2 Chucky. And if you got the pop figure and her autograph, it was only $35. And I'm just like, that's a good deal.
Yeah, right.
So I got it. I went over to meet her and everything like that. I was wearing a shirt. It was like a Monster Squad Stephen King Rules shirt, but it said Wes Craven Rules. And I had bought it at a Flashback a few years ago. And she goes, hi, Wes Craven. And immediately the ice is broken. Yeah, and I'm just like, ha. And then I said, I wish. And then I thought to myself, I'm just like, wait a minute, actually, I would rather be. And she kind of gave me a look like, oh, you poor thing. And then I was just like, eh. I'm like, and then I was like, how's your weekend so far? And then we had like a normal conversation. Good. And then she was signing the pop figure. And I said, and I felt comfortable enough at this point. I'm just like, can I ask you a really random question? And she's just like, yeah, sure.
Are you an angel?
I already know the answer to that.
Yeah,
the answer
too.
Is yes. She was really, really nice. So I said, what is going on in the chili eating scene in Curse of Chucky?
Yes. You told me that you got the answer and you were saving it for the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
So I said, what is going on with that? And like, she was signing it, but I could see her smiling. And she's just like, oh my God. And then I'm just like, and she's just like, that's Don Mancini. That is Don Mancini. He was making, I don't know if he wrote the movie too.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, so she's like, he wrote that scene and he said, I love this scene. I don't care how long it is. I'm keeping it in here. And she's just like, don't worry. You are not the only person who's ever asked me that. And I said to her, I was like, you know what? I actually thought for like a split second, I'm like, maybe I should just get a can of chili for her to sign. And I said, but it probably wouldn't keep too well.
Right.
And then she's just like, bring a can of chili. I'll sign it. And then we could both give it to Don Mancini. And I'm just like, when is this happening? I'm like, when are we going to both be somewhere where we're meeting Don Mancini?
I like this
plan. I'm into it.
He's coming to the massacre, right?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Maybe Fiona will come back.
That would be great. Yeah. So I'll just throw a chili on stage. I'm like, explain.
They're doing Child's Play 2, right?
One.
Oh, the first one.
Yeah,
okay.
First one. Yeah. So she was really cool. I think now I'm always waiting. It's like, what movie's going to get the con bump?
Right.
For me, it's Curse of Chucky.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it would have been Friday 4, but Friday 4 is already good.
It is good.
It doesn't need the bump.
It is good.
Yeah.
Ted White giving it the bump?
I'll let you take the honors on Ted White. No.
We need to get Fiona Dourif is great, and I like those two.
Did you get a chance
Chucky
to meet
movies.
Her?
I mean, not
okay.
Directly.
Yeah.
I stood nearby. I'm so awkward. I don't ever want to butt in on like Heather talks to people and I just kind of like hang back and whatever.
You're like, I was just flexing. One
basically. Just I kept dropping stuff and picking it up, hoping she would look. No, I really like those two most recent Child's Play movies.
Real quick. I forgot before we get off of the Child's Play conversation. So I rewatched Child's Play 2 last night.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a weird experience because the only reason I was watching it was like prove to me, Brad Dourif, Alex Vincent, and Christina Lee, why I should spend $110 to get your autographs.
Didn't do it.
I didn't do it. I left the pop vinyl or the pop figure, whatever the fuck it's called. I left the thing at home. And part of the reason was I just didn't want to be like, I didn't want to spend that much money.
Yeah,
and
right.
then part of it was I so rarely have great autograph experiences that I'm just like, I just want this one right
here. Yeah, right.
Because say I met one of the other ones, I didn't have a good experience, then I'd have to like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was kicking myself a little. We were yesterday having a whole conversation about original one sheets versus reprints and me debating whether or not I try to secure all original one sheets for all of Toby Hooper's movies. And then I was like, wait, one of the only posters I don't own of his movies is Spontaneous Combustion. And I was like, well, why didn't I? A, I'm pretty sure I can get an original Spontaneous Combustion one sheet for about $20 on eBay.
Yeah.
Why didn't I get that and had Brad Dourif sign it?
Hindsight's always 20/20.
You know, like,
but he does a lot of shows, so he might come back.
He's never been to this one, I don't think.
Not this one. Well, he was at it, I think, like when it first started.
Oh, okay. Well,
but he does like a lot of Horror Hounds and
all right. Well, one of these days I'll probably be sending you somewhere with
it.
When
fine.
You go out to see Rob, I'll be like, bring my Spontaneous Combustion poster.
Yeah. It was like I was trying to decide if Child's Play 2 was sponge-worthy.
Child's Play 2 I find super watchable.
I really like it.
I don't think it's that good. But
I think
like,
it's well directed.
Yeah,
it's a great looking movie.
It's so
and it's
easy
well-paced.
To watch.
Yeah.
It's like 80 minutes.
Yeah.
I have tons of nostalgia for it because of like Universal in like 1990-91.
Yeah.
So it's probably like the Child's Play movie that I watch the most.
Yeah. It doesn't really kick in until the last 20 minutes.
And that whole sequence is amazing.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
One of the highlights of Flashback this year was they assembled 5 different stuntmen who have played Jason Voorhees. So they had the Jasons of Part 2, Part 4, Part 5, Part 6, and the Freddy vs. Jason, which we're going to be talking about. So Ken Kersinger, who was there last year as part of
Freddy vs. Jason?
Yeah, but why was he on that panel with like the Nightmare 5 people? Wasn't he?
I don't think so.
I'm just confusing it.
Okay.
I thought he was part of that whole nice guy panel. It was a Freddy vs. Jason panel that we sat through. Never
no,
mind.
No,
never
he
mind.
Was on a panel with stuntmen from different movies because Chris Durand from Scream 2 and Halloween H2O was there. I think it was just different. And the Bill Johnson, Chainsaw 2. Yeah, it was
that
just
was maybe 2 years ago. I don't know. Okay. But I'm conflating the Nightmare 5 panel with the Freddy vs. Jason panel where Catherine Isabel told the great Al Pacino story and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, he seems like a very nice guy. Their panel was fascinating.
Yeah.
Heather did 3 panels in a row. She did a Friday the 13th Part 4 panel with 3 of the actors, which
we need to get back to that too.
Was crazy,
yeah.
But was structured like a Seinfeld episode where at the end all the pieces came together.
It was
in this beautiful moment.
It was the Herald from IO. Yeah.
And then the Steve Johnson panel, which Adam very correctly pointed out that Steve Johnson is basically Tony Stark. But that's he's very entertaining. He's always fun to listen to.
He was a great listen.
Yeah.
I kept wondering, like, because he was Starking it up, he was doing that microphone flip.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it started as sarcastic, but then he kept doing it so much that it was just like, oh, no, you really are like this.
I think he is really like that.
Yeah.
And very rarely at his table all weekend, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
He also had to like apply the Stephen Jeffries makeup, and then they had him in the Fright Night photos, like the group photos, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
And then it was the 5 Jason panel, and it vacillated wildly from like really fun and entertaining to really uncomfortable to then kind of sad.
Yeah.
I wanted to run out of the room more than once.
Yeah, you were blocked, though.
I was 100% blocked.
Can we explain why you were separated from our group?
Yes, that would be because Ted White, who is 92 years old and played Jason in the final chapter, insisted that everyone in the room move forward to the first few rows and would not continue. It was almost like we were all in a raft with hypothermia. Or we were, I guess, the Joe Zito. And he would not continue until the entire audience moved forward.
And he did it in a way where, even though he wasn't, it looked like he was looking at each individual person right in the eye.
Then he's like yelling at somebody for being on his phone.
Yeah.
At one point, we gave them a round of applause, and Heather sort of said, you know, like, you guys have given us so much in terms of, like, we love these movies, and it's because, you know, you guys do these great turns as Jason, and we're such fans, and you all deserve a round of applause. Mm-hmm. At which point, Dan White begins to scold the audience, "Don't applaud. We got paid for this. Yeah. We were doing a job. We're not heroes." And it's like, well, that's not what anyone was saying. Because we're saying, like, we appreciate your work, and we're fans of these movies.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great. And then he told a lot of... he went off script and did a lot of John Wayne stories. And he told this John Wayne story. And obviously, John Wayne meant a great deal to him. And they were friends. But he told this John Wayne story that you kept thinking was going to end, like, inspirationally or as, like, a punchline to a funny anecdote, but it just went, the Duke was about to die, and I kept trying to get into his trailer to say hi to him and everything like that, and I did eventually. Like, it took a while, but I got into his trailer, and the Duke told me, I'm paraphrasing, "I'm about to die. But you have a long time to go." And then silence. And that was it. And that was, like, right near the end of
the panel. It was literally the end of the... It was the last thing. And it was, like, about John Wayne facing his own mortality. Yeah. This story being told by a 92-year-old man on stage who sounds like he's choking up as he tells it.
Yeah.
And then Heather's got to be like, "All right, guys, thanks for coming out."
I mean, like, it Ted was... Ted will be at his booth all weekend to depress you. So one thing I thought was fascinating was I went on Ted White's IMDb, and his last two stunt jobs were in Too Fast, Too Furious and Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift.
That's
and
wild.
I'm like, what in God's name were you doing on those?
Because he was in his 80s at that point. I mean, those movies are 10 to 15 years old.
I just imagine him going on set just scolding John Singleton. "That's too dangerous."
Then he was yelling at the other Jasons.
Yeah, that was my favorite. Oh, yeah. Like, there were times where, like, they would kind of tip it so, like, Ted White could talk.
Right.
But it looked like he just was checked out. And then, but, you know, he's 92. But then, like, there were other moments where he's just, like, yelling over the other ones for, like, questions that they're more than capable of answering.
They kind of had shtick.
Yeah. Steve Dash was like Joe Pesci in Lethal Weapon 2.
100%. I mean, and just real sarcastic.
Pretty funny.
Very funny.
Yeah.
Doing this shtick where he's irritated by everything and doesn't like any of the other actors, but you can tell that they're friends.
He's just like, "I built the framework, you fucking assholes." The other three were basically just kind of straight men to the main two, but it was...
I like when the one guy got... CJ Graham.
Yeah,
they yell at him at one point for wearing a Michael Myers.
Oh yeah. That was... they're like, "Why the fuck are you wearing that?" It was very like a lot of swearing and some. So there was also a lot of stuff with... it was weird. It was like the Friday night double feature about Judy Aronson's hypothermia feature.
Right.
So, like, the first panel of the Friday Four people, it was Peter Barton, Lawrence Monison, and Judy Aronson. And as you said, it was like a Seinfeld episode because it was basically... and I won't reveal who to protect their anonymity, but it was basically like, "I slept with everyone."
It was Peter Barton.
"I have hypothermia."
Judy Aronson.
"I almost killed a dog."
And the way that it dovetailed at the end, because Peter Barton has revealed that he's dated all of his co-stars, and then Lawrence Monison tells this crazy story that I think he started to regret halfway, where he left a dog on its own for way too long, and then one of his co-stars, who it had already been established that Peter Barton had dated, went and rescued the dog, and it gets to this moment where he's explaining, my co-star, she went and got the dog, and she took care of the dog until the end of its life. And all of a sudden, Peter Barton is like... I don't remember the dog's name. Yeah. Like, Rocket? That was your dog? And it comes together like, oh, right, because you dated and you spent time with Lawrence Monison's boy. The way that it all came together was so funny.
Yeah.
And then, because they were all finding out things about each other on stage, which was really entertaining.
And then they were like, these pretzels are making me thirsty. And then credits. And says directed by Andy Sharonis or whatever. So Judy Aronson told this story about how she almost like got really sick for a long time because she got hypothermia.
She tells it in Crystal Lake Memories also.
Okay.
If you've ever seen that doc.
I haven't made it through the whole thing.
It's only 6 hours long.
Okay.
I've watched it multiple times.
That's great. So she told the story about that and that how like Ted White refused to go on until like Joseph Zito called cut so that they could get her warm and everything like that. So we knew this. So I knew this story. I heard it for the first time in the first panel and then like cut to an hour later and this gets factored into the Ted White monologues and Ted White... Ted White just goes.
He's now premiering off Broadway.
He's just like, I'm going to tell you this story. I want you to fucking applaud me. I'm totally making a joke of it at this point. He didn't say these things, but he's just
he
like,
didn't swear too much.
He's just like, I don't want you to applaud me. He's like, but fuck Joseph Zito, fuck Friday the 14th part four, fuck Flashback Weekend, and fuck all of you. I'll be at my table. $40, $50 if you want a selfie combo.
$40 for every Jason is expensive.
It was just like, he was a trip for sure. Other fun stuff I saw at the convention, there was a jigsaw puppet and a service dog was going nuts.
Yeah.
And
the jigsaw puppet was like movie size.
Yes.
And it was riding a tricycle and the guy had like a stick where he could push it around and it would ride the tricycle. So it was exactly what you see in the movie and he's walking around the convention with it.
I kept thinking like the dog was hearing Tobin Bell.
Perhaps.
He was just like, Fido, inside your plush toy is a key. A key that opens the back door to the bathroom. All you have to do is go to your owner and bite off his two hands, rip off his thumbs and make opposable thumbs. And then you can use the key. Make your choice. And then Jock is just like, no, no, no.
Emma Roberts stars in Saw for Dogs. Oh my gosh.
Hotel That's for funny. Saw. Yeah. So there's that. This morning I went back and we were at Heather's table and we were just hanging out and it went from cute to questionable on something. So like a little boy was maybe like 5 or 6 was there with, it might've been his older brother. It might've been his dad. I couldn't really tell. But they were walking around and the kid was about to like go over to like the Severin table, but the dad kind of shied him away. Like, no, it's like, that's not your horror. Like let's go over here. And then, we were making jokes about like, oh yeah, I guess you could see some, like if you're a kid, see some really kind of messed up stuff here.
Yeah.
And then, I guess there's this movie called Bat Pussy. That's like an exploitation movie.
Yep.
So I didn't know about this until this moment, but the kid just goes Bat Pushy. And then
he's
I was like
a little Sean Connery.
And I was just like,
Bat Pushy.
I was like, excuse me. And then he's just like Bat Pushy. And I was just like, what the fuck is he talking about? And then JB was there thankfully, and he's just like, point of order, good sir.
Yeah.
It's Bat Pussy. No, but yeah, it was so just bizarre. I was just like, yes, this is something I could tell on the show.
Nice.
And then I got a they weren't there, but I got a signed Wishmaster soundtrack, Peter Atkins, screenwriter, and Harry Manfredini, the composer.
It's super awesome.
The best thing about the soundtrack are some of the names of the tracks. So I will name my 5 favorite tracks.
All right, here we go.
Okay.
Top 5 tracks on the Wishmaster soundtrack.
Okay, so these are in order of number 5 to number 1 being my most favorite.
Got it.
Okay. There is Stone Research.
Okay.
A Friend Perhaps.
A Friend Perhaps.
A Friend Perhaps.
Hot Dogs and a Ball Game.
Driven Driving.
That sounds like something actors say to warm up. Driven Driving. Driven Driving. Driven Driving.
Whether the weather is cold or whether the weather is hot, we'll be together whatever the weather, whether you like it or not. Red Leather, Yellow Leather. Red Leather, Yellow Leather. unique New York, unique New York. You know you need unique New York. I've been trained.
Yeah, clearly.
Meisner! So then, number two, From the Stillness.
All right.
Because stillness.
Yeah.
That's how I did it.
Yeah, yeah.
Coach Amberson. And then the best one, by far,
there's no competition,
is The Mazda Is Parked.
Which, I feel like you need to point out, where does that fall on the album?
It's the last track.
The last track on the album is called The Mazda Is Parked.
And our friend Scott Drebit from Daily Dead was driving a Mazda rental
That's
car.
Right.
Which
he
wrote
called it a Mazda.
Yeah, he kept calling it Mazda, and I had to decide if I wanted to say Mazda or Mazda.
The Daily Dead / Corpse Club team had all come out. So there was Jonathan and his wife Christy and his brother Jordan. Scott came down from Canada with his wife Michelle. Derek was there. Heather was there. So it was fun hanging out with them.
Do you mind if I test drive your CX-9? Happy to pay for the tolls.
I missed, unfortunately, today. Heather sent me a picture of five people cosplaying as all of the Puppet Master puppets.
Yeah.
I'm very distraught. But yesterday, JB and I saw somebody dressed up in like this amazing hatbox ghost costume from the Haunted Mansion, which JB loves.
Yeah, so I saw that. That was really neat.
You can check our Twitter if you want to see a picture of that, because we put that up there.
Did you costume contest? How was the winner of the costume?
I didn't see
contest?
It. Oh, okay. I didn't. And I saw some people walking around in costumes, yeah. But supposedly somebody dressed as the Thing, like the John Carpenter's the Thing, but then like kind of passed out on stage. I was hearing these stories secondhand. But I don't know. Like, I could just go up as myself and be like, "Hey guys, I'm the Thing."
Yeah.
How would they know?
Yeah. I could see you as like a guy in the Thing.
Right?
Yeah.
I got a beard.
It definitely is the beard that helps it. But yeah, for sure you could be in the Thing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's really all I wanted to hear.
You're welcome.
Anything else flashback related?
No, I mean, it was a fun convention. It always is. It's a great time. So this year was, it's never going to top for like weirdness the 31 panel year. But
I don't want anything to top the 30.
No,
I can't go through that again.
The Five Jasons was number two.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that
was pretty cool.
It was nutty.
Yeah. So looking forward to next year.
Me too.
Happy to pay for the tolls.
Happy to. How long before Wishmaster comes back?
Uh-oh.
So you've got Devoff Kurtzman, screenwriter, composer.
Who I have autographs
yeah.
for? Are you talking about on Wishmaster related things?
No, just in general.
Okay, so I've got Tony Todd also.
Right.
I've got Robert Englund.
Right.
I will get something from Kane Hodder in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
I have Tammy Ted Raimi. I need Tammy Lauren. She's my great white whale.
Yeah. And she is currently not doing shows, right?
She just did the one Horror Hound.
Oof. Ugh.
That was it. But
I'm confident it will happen.
I will pay for the photo op.
Oh,
I will pay.
Sure.
I will pay for.
Will you insist that she make the bug eye face?
If she's willing, I'll try to make the bug eye face. I'll go to the bar and I'm like, a free round of photo ops with Tammy. And they're just like, who? And I'm just like, bite your tongue. She's a legend. She was on Home Improvement for an arc.
All right, so let's talk about Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah.
Not my favorite of the Friday the 13th movies or the Nightmare on Elm Street movies.
No.
And I don't mean to start it off on a negative note.
That's fine.
Here's something, though. I will say that late last year, I want to say, I read a book called Slash of the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
It is a book I highly recommend if you are at all interested in either of these franchises or in Freddy vs. Jason. It is a hard book to read because the print is crazy small.
Hmm.
Crazy small. I don't know why they did it that way. But it is such an interesting book because all it is it goes through every iteration of the script for Freddy vs. Jason. Because there were many writers, many ideas about what the movie could be, should be, almost was.
Over like 15 years.
It was in development for so long, and they just kept trying to crack it.
Yep.
Reading that book did give me greater appreciation for the Freddy vs. Jason that we got.
I heard some of the other conceits, like Jason's on trial.
Oh, you wouldn't believe. I mean, there were all these like cult of Freddy's.
Yeah.
And in almost all of them, Jason was more sort of the hero because it really seems like every screenwriter decides he's the more sympathetic of the two.
They had, of course, like Freddy versus Jason versus Ash.
Yeah, that came later.
They had one where they meet Pinhead in Hell at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because New Line had the rights. Yeah, yeah, it's not... I'm glad that they went the way that they went, which is like, let's keep it simple. Let's just make...
It's a convoluted way that they got them together, but I thought it was like in... idea, it's reasonably clever.
Yeah, it doesn't... honestly, the way that they go about it doesn't totally bother me.
Yeah.
Where it's like, Freddy's trying to come back. He doesn't have the power, so he's going to scare people by sending Jason after them and giving them nightmares, and then he will get stronger and be able to come back. Like, I'm fine with all that.
And they do it pretty quickly, like, as an exposition dump, like, right in the first 5 minutes, so...
Yes, although,
it does
again,
start
like,
the movie kind of
need...
cold,
oh, right.
A little
and
bit,
do
yeah.
we need, like, Freddy Krueger voiceover?
Yeah, like, who is he talking to?
How far have we come where, like, he has very little screen time in the original Nightmare on Elm Street. He is the scary, scary boogeyman. He doesn't even speak that much, and now he's literally Kevin Arnolding Freddy versus Jason.
It is true. Yeah, one thing.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Just 16mm home movie footage of all the previous movies.
He's like, Winnie Cooper! No, yeah, England's weird for me in this movie because he's got some one-liners, but and we might get into this later, and maybe I'm just like a shrinking violet because it's 2018, but like I was bothered by how many times he calls Monica Keena a bitch and a whore.
This is
like it was a lot.
Yes. Again, I like Nightmare on Elm Street 3 a lot. But that is the movie that just set this series down a path that, like, even 5, which, of course, you and I have experienced affection for.
Yeah.
Right. Bon appetit, bitch. Like, why does he have to say bitch? Why
I feel like he only does it, like, once or twice in the other movies, whereas in
How about doing
one...
it no time? Well, whatever. Welcome to primetime, bitch.
Of course.
I'll allow it. But it doesn't need to be now the punctuation.
But he calls her a
everything.
Bitch like with every sentence in this one.
I don't know.
I mean, like, granted, I'm not a big Monica Keena fan myself. She's fine on Undeclared. Did you ever watch Undeclared?
Oh, sure, yeah.
She's good in that show.
She is, yeah.
In this one, I'm not. I don't know. She's not a good focal point.
It's the whole. None of the human stuff works super well for me.
The whole time I was watching it, I wanted Catherine Isabel to be the Monica Keena role.
Oh, for sure.
Because she's just a more interesting personality.
Yes.
I don't know. I think Jason Ritter is pretty likable. And he makes John Travolta faces when he gets mad.
There's like too much plot when it comes to the human characters.
Yeah.
All the backstory about like this unsolved murder in the past. I'm just like, why is this part of the movie at all?
Yeah. What if New Line put like Freddy and Jason on the poster and then like when you get to the movie, it's just Freddy versus Jason Ritter. And you're just like, what?
I mean, they weren't lying, but...
It's like, we can't be mad at them. We expected something that wasn't promised.
I will admit, like, I love both of these franchises.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need this movie.
I didn't either. It's something that I have a lot of fondness for because it's one of the few times that a horror movie's been, like, an event.
Okay. I can see that.
And... I rarely have it happens maybe a little bit more often now, but especially like in 03, there was very rarely where like you would go opening day like I did at 10 in the morning and it would be a full audience amped up to see a horror movie. Like it's usually just like 10 of us. And this one, it was like a Friday night crowd who could not wait for Friday
night.
Right. And that's something that I like. The opening day experience for this movie totally made me like the movie that day. And it really just was special. It's something that I've remembered ever since, you know, 2003. It's a movie that I revisit probably once every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, me too.
But I don't think it's a terrible movie, but it's not a movie where I could point out to anything and say that it does anything good.
Right. Right.
And it's very rewatchable.
It is super rewatchable. Yeah. And again, as a, just a fan of, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th, like, hey, cool, we get to see them both on screen together, which, whatever.
Yeah.
I like that it is, you know, our generation's equivalent of, like, one of those Monster Bash movies from the 40s when they start doing House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula. And they start throwing all the monsters in the same movie. Like, this is the closest that we're going to get.
I want to ask you about that. How do you think, like, if you compared it outside of maybe, you know, because you and I have a lot of affection for the Universal Monster movies.
Yeah.
Outside of, say, like, rose-colored lenses of those things. Or those movies. Sorry, I shouldn't call them things.
No, they're things.
Whatever. Those trifles. sorry, I just got a job writing for Film Comment. I have to up my game. How would you compare Freddy vs. Jason to a, you know, like an Abbott and Costello meet not Frankenstein, meet the Mummy or whatever like that? Like, is it really?
I can't even compare them, I don't think. I mean, it's a weird thing. It's a weird thing because I grew up absorbing all of the Universal Monster movies at once.
Yeah.
So Frankenstein existed at the same time as Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it progress from one thing to the other. Mm-hmm. Whereas with this, it's like I grew up watching A Nightmare on Elm Street, and now I'm seeing Freddy versus Jason, where he's the title character, and he's the hero of the movie, and he's on the poster, and he's what we're all coming to see.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing to see where it had come from to where it had come to. There's room in the world for both, so I'm not saying, like, well, I don't like it because it's not scary anymore, but it is a weird sort of bastardization of what the whole thing started out as.
It is. I think the biggest problem with the movie, and it's something that nobody could have cracked, I think, which is the reason why people want these two guys together is to see them be Mortal Kombat characters and beat the hell out of each other.
Right.
But that's not what they are.
Right.
So you're asking basically, like, you know, like, it's just something, it doesn't work. It's just,
we want to watch them fight each other, which is something we've never seen either one of them do.
Yeah.
Neither one is known for their brawling capabilities or, like, their drawn-out battles.
There's a few moves that I like with, like when Jason picks up Freddy near the beginning of their fight and drags him through, like, 11 window frames.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some fun shots
for
that
sure.
I like. But, yeah, I mean, like, there's some stuff. It reminded me a lot of, like, that Freddy's Dead sequence where he's, like, manipulating Breckin Meyer in the video game. It's,
oh,
like,
geez.
That's what, like, Robert England's
you're
doing.
Not wrong. Yeah.
And then I think the only thing I really liked with their fight at the end was how insanely bloody it gets. I think,
for
like,
sure.
That's fun. That's because that's what you're there. You want to see.
It goes on and on. Yeah. Like, they do deliver.
Yeah.
If you're going to see a movie called Freddy vs. Jason, obviously that's what you want, and they definitely deliver on that.
Yeah.
My feeling in 2003, which I remember seeing this, I think it was that opening Friday, as a double feature with Open Range.
It was a good Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We met my dad for Open Range because he's a Western fan and a Kevin Costner fan, and I'm going to venture to say that was the last time I did anything with him socially. So it's only been 15 years.
Mm. I'm glad I picked Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah, me too. So he took off then after Open Range, and we went to see Freddy versus Jason. And I probably liked it less than I do now because I realized, oh, it's pretty watchable. And at the time, I just was like, okay, but did it have to be so dumb? Like, I get that it's a ridiculous concept and it delivered on having them fight, but, like, did it have to be so dumb? And like I said, rewatching it a bunch and having read that book, it's like, I can forgive the dumbness because look at all of the things it almost was. And by simplifying it, they did the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think my biggest issue with it, aside from some script stuff, some performance stuff, I don't like most of the cast, except for maybe Chris Marquette.
Yeah, he's my favorite of the
He's very sympathetic and is given almost a sad death.
He is. I did like his death a little bit because it's sort of, My least favorite.
You rarely see a character in a slasher movie just bleed out.
Yes. Well, first, okay. I like Christopher Marquette because I've seen him in stuff like Just Friends or, Fanboys, I like him in.
Girl Next Door.
I haven't seen Girl Next Door. But I've seen him in enough stuff where, like,
I don't know how I feel about that.
Okay. Yeah. I've seen him in enough stuff where he's usually a bright spot.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of life to him. He's a good kind of, like, when he has freakouts in movies, they're funny usually.
Yeah.
So I liked him in this. In his death scene, there's sort of like a thread that I guess Kelly Rowland likes him now because he stood up to her, and that like sort of made her kind of crush on him a little bit. But when he's bleeding out, she keeps saying like, "I'll stay with you" or stuff like that. And he kind of is like, he's not officially doing this, but I read it sort of in my brain as, "Get the fuck away from me. I know I'm going to die and I'm not going to spend this moment with you because you're terrible."
Kind of. Well, I mean, the Kelly Rowland thing, I mean, which we need to talk about, like, it seems
there's a lot of problems with it.
Yes. It seems born out of that sort of late 90s Miramax thing where it's like, let's stick Tyra Banks in our Halloween movie or what are some
LL
other
cool
like,
J,
yeah,
Busta
just
Rhymes. Yeah.
Sort of a guest spot from somebody who's maybe not an actor, but they're going to draw in another fan base, basically.
Yeah.
So we'll get all the Destiny's Child fans out for Freddy versus Jason because we need the Destiny's Child fans.
Sure. There's a lot of them.
We have the two biggest horror franchises combined into one, but what if we also had some Kelly Rowland fans?
The thing that bugged me about that is if you're going to go the Destiny's Child route, just get Beyonce.
Why not? She was maybe busy making The Fighting Temptations. I don't know if these movies came out at the same time.
There was no prep time for The Fighting Temptations.
Are you saying they ad-libbed that entire movie?
The entire thing.
Kelly Rowland dates the movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Some of it is just the way that she's costumed and styled. Her acting is not great. She has this terrible dream sequence where she's talking about getting a nose job for the whole movie. And you're
like,
what
like
is she
berating this nurse?
What is she talking? Yeah. Why is Kelly Rowland needing a nose job? Yeah. And then she has her nose cut off by Freddy in the movie's worst CG enhanced special effect.
I would say that's the second worst.
Oh, what's the first?
Definitely Weed Dog.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that's one thing that sucks about this movie is that it was when Hollywood was relying on CGI and not makeup effects anymore.
And it wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole Jason Mewes character is like, I guess you couldn't get Jason Mewes. Anyway, so the Kelly Rowland thing, the thing that everybody points to now is at one point late in the film, she's insulting Freddy Krueger, trying to sort of goat him, and she calls him a very sort of homophobic slur.
Yes.
And the story goes that that was not in the screenplay, that that is something that Kelly Rowland herself ad-libbed.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting to me that, you know, now it really stands out as being so tone-deaf, but I would argue even in 2003, it was like, wait, what? Why?
Yeah. There were people who were like, what the fuck?
Like we've come a long way, but I'm kind of happy that even in 2003 we realized that that was...
And it's weird, too, because Nightmare on Elm Street, most specifically with Nightmare on Elm Street 2, has a LGBT fan base.
Right.
Like, so to kind of insult them so directly is...
Yes, to use such a terrible word.
And I don't know. I mean, like, she's wrong for using that word, but whoever's in charge of, like... The
take
final cut of this movie could have very easily taken it out. The director could have called for another take of that or used a different take of it. The whole scene of her taunting Freddy is hot garbage because it's like for no reason she's a stand-up comedian.
Right.
And she's even her kind of like insults to him don't make sense. She's just like, oh, is it because you have a tiny dick that you have butter knives for fingers? And she's just like, are you overcompensating because Jason's got a big machete? And I'm like, if anything, that means that Jason's got a tiny dick and not like Freddy. I'm like, you're a fucking idiot.
You didn't work through your material.
No,
Kelly Rowland.
But like even the way she delivers it, it's like she watched every Chris Rock special.
Yeah.
And she's just like, here I go.
Right.
And Beyonce's in the audience just being like, that's my girl.
Just riff, Kelly, riff. Yeah.
She's just like, watch what I'm going to do on Pink Panther.
So The script is not great. The acting is spotty. Yeah. My biggest issue with the movie has always been, unfortunately, the direction of one Ronnie Yu, of whom maybe I'm just not a huge fan. I think there's some things that he does well, honestly. I think there are some shots that are kind of pretty, almost. Like, it's shot well at times. But he also does all this weird, like, strobey stuff that I forever fucking hate.
Like this different camera speed shuttering effect.
And it is garbage, and it takes me out of the movie every single
time. He does
it
in, like, every sequence with action in it. Yeah.
And how does it make it better? And how does it... if that's his signature, he has a garbage signature. And
that's what Robert Englund would call, he brought a real Hong Kong
sensibility. Right, exactly. And it's like, yeah, you can say that, but it's not a thing.
It's not good.
And it doesn't help your movie.
Yeah.
And I'm reminded that, like, he kind of did the same thing on Bride of Chucky. There's a lot of great stuff in Bride of Chucky, and then there's a lot of stuff that, like, Ronnie,
I don't like his color palette really all that much either.
Okay. Because
he did this in Bride of Chucky, too, where everything is kind of, like, this bluish tint.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff in Bride of Chucky that I respond to is, like, how hard it leans into being a Universal monster movie. Not for the whole thing, but, like, for a lot of it.
Yeah.
You can tell that he's really trying to do that. And then there's also a lot of garbage Ronnie Yu and a lot of terrible CG gore. You know, the guy getting hit by the truck is, like, one of the worst effects ever. And that's I don't know. I don't think you can get away with doing that in a Freddy versus Jason movie. I don't think you can get away with CG gore effects in a franchise that, like, that's the thing. That's why we're going to see these movies, to see the crazy practical effects played out.
For sure. Okay, I got a question for you. Freddy versus Jason, I know the answer, Freddy versus Jason over Nightmare on Elm Street remake, but Freddy versus Jason or Friday the 13th remake?
Friday the 13th remake might be a better movie.
I like it more than most people do. I don't think it's bad.
I don't love it.
Okay.
I think it's a better, more cohesive movie.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to watch one, I'm probably watching Freddy vs. Jason, honestly. Because Friday the 13th remake gives me very little, because it's kind of a greatest hits compilation of all the other movies. And I know the other movies well enough, and I would rather just watch the other movies. Freddy vs. Jason at least gives me something that I'm not getting from the other movies in either franchise.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, before you watched Freddy vs. Jason for the first time,
yes,
did you have somebody that you were rooting for going into it?
I don't think so.
Okay. I'm definitely more of a Freddy guy.
Okay.
So I was on board for that. And I think, I don't know if it's Bob Shea's influence, because I know he had his fingers in this a lot, or if it was Ronnie Yu's kind of influence. I think they're on my side more than they are on...
You think they're...
I think they're Freddy fans more than Jason fans.
Interesting. Maybe.
Because the other question I was going to ask you is, do you think this works... I know that you don't think it works in general, but do you think it is a better Nightmare on Elm Street movie or a better Friday the 13th movie?
Interesting. I'd really have to think about that.
I think it's a better Friday the 13th.
Okay.
Because the nightmare sequences are so kind of abrupt in this.
Okay.
It's either like Boiler Room and that's like a minute and a half, or it's like anything else and that's, and it's 15 seconds.
Right.
Whereas I think, like, in the other movies, they're set pieces and these are, they're more like visual punchlines.
I like this. I don't want to see Catherine Isabel die, but I do like the scene where Freddy's about to kill her.
Yeah.
And Jason fucks it up.
Yeah, it's a good little twist.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so that's...
It's ruined by the fact that glow stick man is on top of her.
Yes, my God. Like, what? Yeah. Although I do like the visual of Jason on fire walking through the cornfield.
Yeah, the whole cornfield thing kind of was confusing to me because it's this perfect circle in the cornfield. And I understand that, like, corn bends, but then bends back up, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've only seen Field of Dreams a few times. but... Yeah, like, I don't know. It always made me laugh. I think every time I see it, it makes me laugh that they, like, do this like crane shot into the cornfield right. party and everything. And then like everybody's dancing around this car that Monica Keen is just sitting on the hood, like closing her eyes and dancing with her shoulders. It's like, okay.
None of the human stuff.
I bet you Robert Englund was just like, Monica Keen is like a young Garbo in that they're both women. I love Robert Englund. He's the best. He's such a ham, though.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's why I like him so much in Wishmaster, because that's Robert Englund.
Yeah. And I got to say, like, we should probably talk about the Ken Kersinger, Kane Hodder controversy. I like Ken Kersinger. I think he seems like a nice person. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with his Jason. It's not like I feel like, oh, he's a bad Jason. Yeah. Because I came to a realization, and I think I talked about this on a recent podcast. Did I? The last time I watched, I think it was part 8, I watched Jason Takes Manhattan and mm-hmm. came to the realization that I don't love the Kane Hodder Jason. Okay. Like, I love Kane Hodder for what he has done for horror. I love...
It was on Holliston, right?
What?
Wasn't he on Holliston?
He did a little arc on Holliston. He wasn't a regular on Holliston.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I love, you know, what he does for horror and the way that he's been kind of a... one of the faces of horror, and the way that he sort of carried this franchise and how important Jason was to him and how he became such a part of the franchise. I think they were wrong to not make it Kane Hodder.
Yeah.
I don't love the way he portrays Jason as the kind of this big, heavy breathing Hulk. I like earlier Jason's a little bit better. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, oh, he's my favorite Jason, so I wanted to see him in this movie. But I just think if you're going to do Freddy versus Jason, like, fans want to see Robert Englund and Kane Hodder.
Yeah, he's the Jason that they've come
right.
to
rally. They don't
want
to see Robert Englund and this guy
yeah.
who's filling the Jason suit. Again, nothing against Ken Kersinger, who mm-hmm. I like. And I've heard all kinds of different reasons about, you know, the studio didn't want him, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know if it was Ronnie Yu or... New line or what? I can't remember.
I heard was that Ronnie Yu wanted he wanted Jason to be like taller, basically.
Okay.
And Kane Hodder was like 6'3", and Kersinger was 6'5", and he was more slender.
Okay.
Whereas he thought that kind of Kane Hodder was more of like a bulky guy.
Yeah, he is.
And he wanted somebody kind of like, I guess, with a body type closer to England's, but other than height disparity. I don't know. I mean, it's like one of those things where like nobody knows for sure,
right? And I just, the movie exists only as fan service, so why not do fan service? Why not just let it be Kane Hodder, so that the fans of these franchises are going back to it to watch it for that, because no one is going back and watching like, wow, I really like the height disparity between the two of them. That really, to me, is the key to what makes this movie succeed. And people still have embraced the movie, but it is this weird sort of dark spot on the movie's record.
Yeah. And it's something that I'm sure I'm more conscientious than Adam versus Dictionary, than other fans. But like, so Ken Kersinger was at Flashback Weekend.
Yeah.
And okay, so like I almost got his autograph this morning, and it was more just because I wanted to talk to him about Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah.
But I ended up not doing it. And part of the reason was I knew I was maybe going to get Kane Hodder's autograph in a couple weeks. And if I get something like a Jason hockey mask or something like that, if Ken Kersinger's mm-hmm. autograph is on mm-hmm. it, I don't know how cool Kane Hodder and sure. Ken Kersinger are on sure. it already. And I'm sure Kane Hodder wouldn't say anything and he would just sign it because he's done it 100 times. But at the same time, like, I know he felt so kind of hurt by yeah. the decision that, like, I don't want to be ignorant to that.
Mm-hmm.
And
no, that's really thoughtful of you, actually. Yeah. I haven't seen the documentary yet.
I haven't either. I have it on my rentals
okay.
on Amazon.
To Hell and Back, the Kane Hodder story, mm-hmm. available on VOD now from Dread Central Presents.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, Rob is going to be on the show, and we're going to talk Dread Central Presents movies.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm excited about
that'd
that.
Be fun.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to that documentary, and I'm sure that they talk about it because, yeah, he took it hard, you know?
Yeah. Going back to the fight at the end. This is why Jurassic World is the worst fucking thing in the world. The end scene. Okay, so like they're on the pier and it's Jason Ritter and Monica Keena and they're kind of cowering. And I think Freddy has Jason's machete in his hand. And then then Jason comes out of the water like the Mosasaurus.
Right.
And he stabs Freddy through the chest with his own, with Freddy's arm and the claw and everything. Yeah. And then he just like does this like Mosasaurus dive back into the water. And he's just like, oh no, guys, I'm dead. I just came back to do this. Don't worry about it. Fucking Jurassic World.
In most of the drafts of the previous iterations of this movie, Jason, again, like I said, was kind of the more sympathetic one. It seems like the screenwriters were much more on Jason's side, and I think it's because for some reason Jason is seen as a tragic victim, whereas Freddy is a predator. He's a monster.
Yeah.
You know, they're both killing people left and right, but for some reason, everyone's like, yeah, but Jason can't help it. It's not his fault. He died as a boy and then aged as a zombie. And this movie, I think, kind of does the same thing. You know, Jason is sort of on the side of the kids, whether unwittingly or not, for much of the movie. I know there was much debate over who should win, and I think there was talk about, you know, shooting different endings.
Yeah, they were going to do the Clue or Unfriended Dark Web thing.
Oh, that's right. Dark Web does it too.
Yeah. I haven't talked to anybody.
Did you read up on the other ending?
Yeah, I haven't talked to anybody who's seen the other ending. Like,
oh, weird.
I talked to, I think, Heather. I know I talked to Jonathan from Daily Dead about it, and yeah, we saw the same ending, and I know like every review I've read has kind of called out. It's like, well, there's another ending, but I saw like this ending.
Weird. And the ending that you saw versus the one that you read about, which do you think is the better ending?
I think one is more arty and one is more like just kind of just blunt and to the point.
Got it.
And I saw the blunt and to the point one, which I'm fine with. I mean, like, it's not a movie. I don't even know. I mean, like, the Unfriended movies aren't really like ones where they're dependent on like a final moment, really. It's all just sort of
it
about,
all
like,
has
the
to come together.
It's all about the escalating tension on the computers. All right. So you had mentioned earlier that you're not a big fan of the work of Ronnie Yu.
I guess not, although I haven't seen his like Hong Kong movies. Like,
I haven't seen his Hong Kong movies,
Hair, but I have seen Formula 51.
That was him?
Yeah, that's him.
Oh, okay. That's the one that joint. I missed.
I have a shirt that says, fuck you, but it's YU.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll give it to Kane Hodder.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give it to Ken Kurtzinger, signed by Kane Hodder. No, I saw, it's funny because he's made one movie that I legitimately like a lot. That's Fearless, the Jet Li movie that we talked about actually on a Heavy Action show.
Okay.
It was from 2006. It was one of those, like,
I don't know if I've seen it, and I definitely didn't realize that it was him.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I looked up his filmography. Bride of Chucky I used to really like, but I'm tired of the joke. So it's for Bride of Chucky.
And I like 50 to 75% of it.
Yeah. And then Freddy versus Jason, obviously not so much. And then the one that's fucking weird, but I really kind of liked, was Warriors of Virtue.
Which I never saw.
It's like Ninja Turtles with kangaroos.
I couldn't even understand how that movie was getting a theatrical release at the time. I was like, who is this for?
Me?
The Angus McFadden fans?
He's very old. He's giving a Billy Zane Demon Knight performance in it. It's kind of fun.
All right.
Yeah. Ronnie Yu.
Warriors of Virtue.
So, like I said, I mentioned that this movie was something I was really nostalgic for from the time that it was released. I remember just loving the poster. Do you remember the poster where it
just
says
the two faces?
The two faces?
Yeah.
Okay, so there was a bar that I went to once with like people from Enterprise Rent-A-Car when I was interning there as a summer intern in college. And there was this one bar that we went to, and they had, for whatever reason, maybe it was like a special like Miller Lite branded Freddy versus Jason poster, but it was like the theatrical poster of it. And they had it up in the bar, and I remember that I went back to the bar once, and it was 90% just because I wanted to see the poster again. And the first time I went, it was with the Enterprise people, and it was like they were giving me basically like my evaluation for the summer, and they were trying to get me to like agree before I went away to school to come back the next year and be a full-time employee at an enterprise branch. And I didn't want to do that. So I remember the whole time I knew basically like I had all the cards because like I wasn't going to give them what they wanted.
Right.
And the whole time I was just like drinking a beer and like waiting this out. And I was looking at the Freddy versus Jason poster and I'm just like, August 15th is gonna rage. So anytime I rent a car, I think about Freddy versus Jason.
Well, yeah, of course.
A Mazda, if you will. What if I were to tell you that I would like Mazdas for my family everlasting? I will purchase them at Ahura Mazda. Do you wish for this commish?
Yeah, where's the Mazda right now? The Mazda is parked.
Did you put on the parking brake? We are on a steep incline. Alexandra.
What if I were to tell you, you must turn your wheels in towards the curb when parking on an incline?
What if I were to say you do not need the additional coverage? You have it covered under your Allstate insurance. You are in good hands with the gin.
Ginsurance!
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Just like, my boss is going to kill me, but I'll see what I can do about the mud flaps. I'll be right back. Would you like to finance this for 5 or 6 years? Or everlasting? Lower payments, but monthly for the rest of your being.
Oh, man.
I would love if the djinn had to get a real job.
For sure.
He's just like, oh, man, so many statues to feed.
Do you have a favorite death scene from the movie?
Oh, man, I got to think about this one.
I don't think there are many good ones, which, again, I think is a problem if you're trying to do the best of both.
Oh, geez.
I think there's one that I like.
Okay, you go first, I think.
It's Catherine Isabel's boyfriend.
Oh, yeah, the best one.
Yeah.
That guy plays it a little bit. He plays it like 50% too douchey.
Yes, but again, I remember from that panel, he seemed very nice.
Yeah,
and I liked him better. Yeah,
I do like the scene where it's in Catherine Isabel's dream where he finds her in the corn stalks, and he's just like holding up his head. He's like, "Come on, let's go!" And he's still being like Matt Dillon at her,
right. still an asshole. But yeah, the getting folded in half the wrong way is pretty.
It's a good scene. Whatchamacallit? One actor in it that bugs me. And it's not his fault.
Most of them. Oh, it's, what's his name?
Lachlan Monroe.
Yeah.
Because the moment you see him, you expect it to turn into Scary Movie, and he's doing, like, Doofy from Scream.
Right.
Or he's doing the David Arquette parody. But he's not. And I'm just like, you know, God bless you, you're trying.
Right.
But, like, I can't, you need to cast a different actor in that part.
Well, and I don't like either of the actors on loan from Uwe Boll.
Zach Ward, and who's the other
Brandon,
one?
Brandon. He's in those Rampage movies.
Are you talking about the guy who's locked in the asylum?
His brother. Yeah, oh. Zach Ward's brother.
Yeah, you mean fake Mark Webber?
Fake Mark Webber. He's in those Uwe Boll Rampage movies where, like, a guy goes around and shoots people, and it's awful.
Oof. Did you know Evangeline Lilly's in this in a cameo?
What?
Yeah. She's in the scene.
The Wasp?
The Wasp in the Mazda. We got a Wasp in the Mazda. it's like the Minnesota screening.
So who is she in this?
She she's got no lines. She's in the scene where Monica Keena sees Jason Ritter and Uwe Boll Boy in the hallway, and it's like when she goes, "I heard a song, and it's 1-2, and he's just like, Fred is coming for you. Yeah, it's that. She's like in the background, leaned against a locker, but they give you like a few shots of it, and it's just like, the Wasp!
Is it just because she was like trying to break in?
Yeah.
Like, this is just early Evangeline Lilly?
It's just like a random horror cameo before they were famous. Yeah,
that's bananas.
I didn't know that until I read the Wikipedia page, and then it the reference link to the moment. They're just like, at 1:31, look for this. So, and I also went on like a YouTube rat hole.
Turns out she's in the whole movie. She's just very small the whole time.
Oh, I like what you did there. Yeah. Yeah, I went on a YouTube rat hole, and like part of the promotion of this was they did like a weigh-in at Bally's. Mm-hmm. Did you ever watch that?
No, but I remember it existing. I might have seen some like clips of it.
Yeah, it's not that funny.
It's not.
It's like 4.5 minutes, and it's very strained.
And I get, you know, why they were trying to promote it. I keep coming back to like, I'm the audience for this movie.
Yeah.
And yet,
yeah,
I don't feel like this movie is for me.
Yeah, it feels like something that they'd be like, wait until the end of tonight's Married with Children and we'll show you the Freddy versus Jason weigh-in.
There's just something so kind of cynical about it, and it just feels like a not what JB calls a filmed deal, but just a stupid studio being like, oh, let's put these two in a movie. And the fact that they worked on it for so long, just based on that one little gag at the end of Jason Goes to Hell, which I like the gag at the end of Jason Goes to Hell better than I like any of Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah.
And also, I don't know that I like Freddy versus Jason any more than Jason Goes to Hell or Jason X.
I would definitely go Jason X, Jason Goes to Hell, Freddy versus Jason.
Okay.
In that order. But I think Jason Goes to Hell and Freddy versus Jason are closer for me than for you.
Maybe. I don't know. The last time I watched Jason X, I liked it a little less than previous watches.
I've only seen it once.
But I need to rewatch Jason Goes to Hell.
Yeah. Jason X is... Oh, I purchased all the Blu-rays of the Friday series because I've only seen 4 of them.
How are they?
1 through 8.
I didn't even realize they were all on Blu-ray.
The Paramount ones? There's a box out of it.
Oh, I didn't...
Yeah, on Amazon it's like $26-$27.
Jeez.
So, I know...
I don't have 5 through 8 on Blu-ray.
Okay.
I need to get that shit.
If I don't like them, you can just have them.
No, thank you.
We'll see. I'm gonna. There's yeah, a good I'm saving them.
Which ones have you not seen?
I'm saving them for October. Okay. I've seen one a ton of times.
Sure.
Did I ever tell you about my slasher show that I was in? This was before we knew each other.
No.
So like, I was in the comedy arena in Chicago for a while, and then the last show I ever did, and it was a bad experience, so I kind of stopped doing it. It was a improvised slasher movie, and it was like 45-minute show. And the woman who was directing the show basically had never seen a slasher movie in her entire life.
That's a problem.
Yeah. So, and then she just kind of stopped going to our shows, which sort of was a blessing in disguise because she was annoying and also didn't know what she was talking about. So, like, when she was gone, we sort of just kind of went in our own direction with it and freed us up. And by the end of it, I got like the last show I ever did was the only show that I liked because the audience was about 15 people. And, I worked in a Dark Crystal joke.
Nice.
A running Dark Crystal joke about dream fasting.
Okay.
And because it's a slasher show and it's Nightmare on Elm Street with dreams, the dream fasting kind of dovetailed nicely into the dream logic. So, it started where I went up to a character and then I just like held their hand and then they're just like, what's happening? And I said, we're dream fasting. And like the person who I did that to knew Dark Crystal and like ran with it. 15 people in the audience, one guy laughed, but he laughed hard. Uh-huh. And then for the rest of the show, I was like, I'm only playing for that guy. And then after it was over, he's just like, that was one of the best shows I've ever seen. And I was just like, oh my God, thank you. Yeah. And that was like the high point of that show. But the reason I bring it up is because Friday the 13th is the movie that we were supposed to watch as research because she was real creative. So that was the movie we watched as research. So I think I saw that movie in 2010 about 30 times.
Oh my gosh.
So Friday the 13th, I know a lot. I have not seen Steve Dash part 2.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a really good one.
I've seen 3, but only in prep for the commentary we did.
Okay.
At least I think I was on that commentary. Pretty sure I was. Maybe not.
I don't know if you were.
Or no, I watched it to listen to the commentary. Okay. One of those things. Four I've definitely seen. Four was one of like my sleepover movies when I was a kid. Five through eight I have not seen.
You're in for a little rough road.
Okay.
You may enjoy six.
Okay. And then, and Mike, I know, loves seven.
Oh my gosh. It is so hands down his favorite.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll talk to him about it after I see it.
Yeah.
And then I've definitely seen Jason Goes to X.
Okay.
Jason Goes to Hell.
Yeah.
Triple X and, State of the Union.
Right.
And the remake. Yeah, so,
well, I'm excited for you to see some of those for the first time.
I am too. I think I'm more ready for them than I used to be. I was a real prude about them before, but like I...
In what way?
I thought they were just like too mean-spirited and I just couldn't get into it. And now I just am old and like I don't care. Like now I'm just like, what's in the fridge? It's like that funny people joke. Oh, by the way, so I started watching Freddy vs. Jason and I take notes while I'm watching it for podcasts.
You're
and stuff.
A better man than I.
45 minutes in, I had zero notes. And it wasn't because I was caught up in the movie.
Because it's a perfect movie?
It wasn't because it
was a
perfect
movie. What could I possibly say about these first 45?
I was just like, I have no thoughts about any of this. No. And then I just went out and I got like Blue Moon and I started drinking a couple of beers. And then I was just like, the thoughts are flowing. So this is the only way to drink.
Now I got some notes.
Yeah. I have suggestions.
Favorite lines from the movie?
Nope.
There are some real
like what
garbage ones.
Oh, oh, I do have one.
Yeah,
yeah, I wrote it down.
By the way, no, when I say favorite lines, I'm not. I don't mean actual favorite lines. I mean,
well, I want to hear your sarcastic ones. Are you going to remember them? Can I tell my line that I like first?
I have two that I remember really shitty. One is Monica Keena, and this is I think kind of famous. They might have even talked about it on Crystal Lake Memories that it was not in their original script. The whole. Freddy died by fire, Jason by water. How can we use that?
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, and then they go into, like, it's a dream sequence of hers, so they kind of shy away from it. But, yeah, it's a real...
It's real dumb, and I think the screenwriters perhaps distanced themselves from that line, but my favorite, I believe, is Kelly Rowland saying something along the lines of, "We ain't safe awake or asleep."
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. I liked when... this is one I actually... The one line in it I think is actually kind of funny is when Christopher Marquette is maybe going to have to give mouth-to-mouth to Jason...
Okay.
And then he says, "I can't, I have asthma." And then Kelly Rowland won't do it. And then Jason Ritter just yells from the driver's seat. He's just like, "Kia, he has asthma." Just the way he delivers it is pretty funny.
What a stupid scene. Like, what are we talking about? Let's fight over who's going to give Jason Voorhees CPR.
The thing that's even worse about it is you should have somebody give him CPR and then he kills them. Like, that's what the setup of
right.
it is.
So, but at that point, I guess he was still I think the sort worst, of sympathetic, Jason. I
think
know.
The worst line is maybe, like, when Jason's in the cornfield, and then the party dude who looks like he's 40 years old, and then the
fake
other guy.
Dan Fogler?
Yeah. Oh, I have a soft spot for Dan Fogler.
I apologize.
That's okay. No, are you apologizing because I have terrible taste, or because...
That I said anything.
He's the only good thing in Fantastic Beasts.
A movie I will never see.
And I kind of like him in Fanboys because he reminds me of a guy that I work with.
I saw Fanboys once. I don't remember it. I know you like it a lot, and Heath likes it a lot, but I haven't seen it
It doesn't date real well because now they're the Last Jedi bros a little bit.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, where they weren't before.
Got it.
But, and then the guy next to fake Dan Fogler, just the way he delivers his line is he's just like, "This is a private party, bro, and you're not invited." Ugh. It's just like, oof.
He also provided the voice of Michelangelo.
Yeah. I didn't know I was that good at Michelangelo.
Oh, dude.
Pizza guy's got 30 seconds. So... whatchamacallit. Okay. One thing that I like about movies, horror movies of this era is that they meshed heavy metal. And why I say I liked, I mean I didn't. So one of the things that I like is the names of bands.
Oh boy,
on the soundtrack. So I did the honors of writing
the
down
versus Jason soundtrack.
The names of the bands, which I'm convinced these are bands just created to be on the Freddy versus Jason soundtrack.
Probably.
There's a few that I've heard of. I'll get to them.
All right,
but there's. I just picture the commercial being like Freddy versus Jason, the motion picture soundtrack featuring
music by
Il Nino, Killswitch Engage.
Killswitch Engage? That's the band?
Like Engage, like Picard.
Right, yeah. But it's all part of the same. It's
two words. Killswitch Engage.
Oh, boy.
Spine Shank.
We could have turned this into a game, like guess the real band on the Freddy vs. Jason soundtrack.
We totally could.
Yeah. Spine Shank.
It's just
a group of adults. What should we call our band? Spine Shank.
Yeah. They broke up in 2004, but they got back together in 2009, and they're known as the Spine Shank Redemption.
Meanwhile, somebody's listening to this right now, and you're like, you guys don't know what you're talking about. Spine Shank's good. And they may be. I'm sorry.
They're like, sorry, my brother's in Spine Shank. Like, I swear to God, we're going to offend one of the front men of these bands who is like an active like donator and listener. And if I'm doing that, I am very sorry. Mushroom Head.
Okay.
Hate Breed.
Oh, Hate Breed, I've heard of, actually.
Okay. Slipknot, I know them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This one I don't get because I think it's a reference to Mission Impossible 2. Because their band name is Chimera.
I was going to say, is it Chimera?
Yeah.
It 100% is a reference to Mission Impossible 2.
Seven Dust, which I've heard of.
Chimera used to open for Bellerophon.
God, is that the antidote?
Of course.
Okay, good.
Or the other way around. I don't know which is which. I know Tandy Newton has one and needs the other.
Yeah. I hate when they do their cover of Ico Ico.
By the way, I literally wanted to stand up and cheer. There's a moment in Mission Impossible Fallout where Tom Cruise does some rock climbing, and I wanted to stand up and say, it paid off! But they should have been playing Ico Ico.
Yes, for sure.
And they should have thrown his sunglasses.
Yeah, Ico Ico's really followed him in his career. Seven Dust, which I've heard of.
I've heard of Seven Dust.
Power Man 5000, which I usually actually kind
of
like.
I know of them.
Murder Dolls.
Which is coming this fall from Full Moon.
Yeah, Charles Band. Charles Band. It's like Rollins Band, but they open for him.
Murder Dolls.
Seether, I know that.
All right, I've heard of Seether.
Stone Sour, I've heard of.
Heard of them, unless I'm thinking of a drink.
Devil Driver, which I know because they all work at Golf Galaxy now. Sepultura? Sepultura?
Oh, Sepultura is big, yeah.
Yeah.
I know them.
They work at Spatula City. The Blank Theory.
Heard of them.
They open for The Fray. Nothing Face.
Oh, God. Nothing Face is like, I get all these emails with like screening links to really small indie horror movies. I'm positive one of them was called Nothing Face, or he was the new slasher icon for the 2000s.
I don't understand how this wasn't like a double album, because there's a lot of bands on here. In Flames.
All right, I've heard of In Flames.
Lamb of God.
Heard of Lamb of God.
Typo Negative.
Heard of them.
My favorite, this is the one where they'd be like, and the, they would name all the bands, and then they go, and the new hit single, it's the new hit single, The After Dinner Payback by From Autumn to Ashes.
Wow. Ooh, yeah. From Autumn to Ashes. Yeah. So many of those bands sound like, do you remember on Saturday Night Live when they used to do the fake Underground Music Festival commercials that were making fun of
Dan.
Like,
Rest in peace, Ass Dan.
Kickspit. Was either a band or maybe that was the name of the Underground Festival. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, Spine Shank is still my favorite.
I think I'm partial to... Oh, boy. Yeah, I guess Spine Shank.
Spine Shank.
Chimera is pretty good. Because I just imagine them watching Mission Impossible 2 and being like, looking at each other in the theater.
You think what I'm thinking?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Because our music poisons Tandy Newton. And no one else.
Did you think at the beginning of Freddy versus Jason?
Because we were unleashed upon the world by Doug Ray Scott.
in all their music videos is Rade Serbiaguri, and he's like dressed like Rob Zombie.
Did I see what now?
Like at the beginning of I forgot to mention this on the Jurassic World show, but this is like applicable to the title card in Freddy vs. Jason.
All right,
so they did the whole like Freddy vs. Jason, and then they play like 15 seconds of a heavy metal song.
Yeah,
there they weren't before. Do you remember you probably don't because you're a normal person, but Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, they have the title card and it's like the Jurassic World logo in lava.
Yes.
When I saw that, I was just like, is this fucking Mortal Kombat? Like, yeah. What is this?
No, it looked shitty.
They're like, blue?
Never underestimate the importance of a title card.
Like, Ninja.
If the aesthetics of your title card are dog shit, like, I don't know.
Hacker boy. Claire. Fallen Kingdom! It's Ted Levine doing it.
One of the weirder guests that a flashback has had is, and she was on that Freddy vs. Jason panel, is the recast of Betsy Palmer.
Who didn't come back because she said the role wasn't big enough.
Right, and I don't blame her. And the actress who they recast, I mean, does a fine job, but like to get her as a guest at a convention seems crazy because what is she going to talk about?
Yeah, like, that's like if you got like the orderly at the insane asylum.
Right. I mean, there's
just like, she's playing an iconic
role. Right. Except she's playing an iconic role, but like, I don't know. She yells a little and isn't Betsy Palmer. Those are the two things that define her performance.
Yeah. Speaking of flashback and Freddy versus Jason, I got Robert Englund's autograph, it's on a Freddy versus Jason poster because I also got Ken Kersinger to sign it. So nice. Ken Kersinger signed it first.
Okay.
And then Robert Englund was signing it. And I think it's so great because it just says, Jason sucks, Robert Englund. And I'm just like, yeah.
Did you get Monica Keena to sign it?
No.
No, not so much.
I was.
You're good after those two?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, like, I
it's
think.
It's one of those things where it's like, I either stop at these two or I got to go all in.
Yeah, I've noticed that my thing is to get two signatures max on stuff because I don't like buying 27 by 40s because I know they're either just going to sit there or it's going to be like hell on earth to frame.
Yes.
11 by 17s I can be non-committal about, and okay, I can also like just throw under a bed, and if like, oh, Justin Long's at Monster Mania, I guess I can take out this Drag Me to Hell poster that right. Alison Lohman signed and right. now make it a thing, not just some random Alison Lohman autograph. So that, and then like now I really, ever since I got that Wishmaster 3D art thing,
yes,
now I'm just kind of like, well, what's something kind of kitschy that okay. I can get signed? Like, got I'm more it. About the kitschiness than got like, it. But obviously I can't find anything kitschy with thinner. Tom Holland didn't want to talk to me about thinner.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Should have asked him what it was like to work with my man, Michael Constantine from Greek Wedding.
I'm not a fan though of, and I've never done this, and I know lots of people do, but I would never just get like an 8x10 photo of the actor
signed.
I feel
like that's you giving up.
Kind of. Yeah. Like if it's not a poster or like something that's related to the movie, like I don't just need a picture of Fiona Dorff that she signs.
I know Heath collected those back in the day because he has a Serial at Midnight episode where he used to send out in the mail requests for autographs from actors, and of course they would give you like a
right
from the stack an 8x10 so,
which I mean that I get,
yeah,
but yeah, I don't know, I mean the whole, we could do a whole thing on autographs and how weird it is, and
yeah. Like, I'm ready for that show.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. The last thing I had,
Spine Shank.
Well, yeah, do you want to do a bunch of Spine Shank covers?
Yeah,
you're like Spine Shank followed by Scoliosis. Anal Death Trap.
They are definitely on volume 2 of the Freddy vs. Jason soundtrack.
Cock Sweat featuring Tom Atkins. Red Blood Count featuring Osmosis Jones.
It's like the second Osmosis Jones reference I've heard in a week, which, how is that possible?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't remember the other one, but
Fallout, featuring the new hit single "Red Light, Green Light," Chimera. All right. The last thing I wanted to ask you was, let's talk about 2003 in horror.
Oh boy,
because I made a list.
Not a great time.
I'm gonna name off the titles, and I want you to give me your one word review.
All right. Is Spine Shank one word or two?
It's one.
All right. I'm looking up their discography.
They're like, we didn't get the tits till we went legit. Spine Shank.
Oh,
okay. So, House of the Dead.
Uwe.
Mm-hmm. Say No More.
Yeah.
Identity.
I need to rewatch Identity. Yeah. I remember, like, not liking the twist of Identity.
I hated the twist. It ruined the movie for me.
Because I had seen Adaptation.
Mm.
And that's essentially,
yeah.
Isn't that what he's pitching in Adaptation, is Identity, basically?
I think so.
That's my memory of it.
Okay.
But, I mean, James Mangold is a good director,
Mangold.
Right? And so, like, he directs it well.
James freed from Boba Fett Mangold.
That movie's never happening.
Willard remake?
Not the worst, kind of interesting.
Original or remake, what should I watch if I had to watch one? Willard.
I mean, you're fine not watching either, honestly, but I think they're both worth seeing.
Okay. Underworld.
Yeesh.
I've never seen it. I skipped a lot of these.
It's so goddamn boring. Again, I saw the trailer and I was like, vampires versus werewolves, please sign me up.
Yeah.
And then I saw the movie and I was like, how are you this boring?
Mm-hmm. Gothica.
Oof.
I've never seen it.
Oh.
Dreamcatcher, I have seen.
Can I tell you a story?
Yeah.
This actually came out on the live. Spine Shank has a song called Malnutrition, by the way.
They're like our new Danny Nucci.
He loves Spine Shank.
Yeah.
He calls him Spine the Shank. I went to lunch yesterday with...
Putting me on my shoulders, Paula Marshall.
I went to lunch yesterday with Heather and our server, who was very nice. We talked about this on the live Corpse Club that we recorded yesterday, but the server was very nice, and he saw that she was wearing a badge. I see your badge. What are you here for? She said, well, I'm at this horror convention. He's like, oh, I really love horror movies. So he came back and he said, so you guys say you love horror movies. What are some of your favorites? So we talk a little bit about, you know, oh yeah, we like these and these and these. And so then he started trying to list his, and he said, well, I think like the first two, like the original two Jeepers Creepers, those would be up there for some of my favorites. And I'm like, I can't get on board with that, but fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there's a pause and Dreamcatcher.
Whoa.
It's like, wow, not just you like it, but it's a favorite. The world is a rainbow. Every movie is somebody's favorite movie, but it's very hard to respond. You know, usually when somebody's like, oh, you want to be like, oh yeah, yeah, that's a really good one. Like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, even if I don't love whatever movie, I could be like, okay, I get it, but man, Dreamcatcher, that's a hard one to even fake.
Yeah. The original name of Spine Shank was Jason Lee Shit Monster.
I think I saw most of these theatrically.
Oh, I'm not done.
Oh boy.
Darkness Falls.
I did not see that one theatrically, nor have I ever seen it.
Jeepers Creepers 2.
Darkness Falls, what was the studio that...
Oof.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Like they did like a run of those movies. Like
was it Revolution?
Maybe. There's another
one. Scream Gems.
It's like the Tooth Fairy.
Yeah.
It's all like the same movie in my head.
Yeah. Well, Boogeyman was one. I bought that at the used bookstore for $2.
Jeepers Creepers 2, I saw opening day as a double feature with American Wedding. That was a rough day at the movies.
That's an interesting double feature. yeah, I'm bummed because I would, if not for He Who Must Not Be Named, I would have really liked to do a show on Jeepers Creepers at some point. But
yeah,
what's the point?
I think both movies are...
Because I really liked the first one until I knew.
Yeah, I think both movies are kind of interesting.
It's got a great ending.
And then I got the... I don't love the ending.
Yeah, I like the ending.
I thought both movies were kind of interesting and kind of okay. And then I got the internet.
Yeah. Mm. Texas Chainsaw Remake.
Fuck that movie.
Yep.
Great trailer.
Yeah.
Unbelievable trailer.
One of my favorite things is, like, obviously when you go to like any of these horror thons, sometimes they have like trailers in between. And I remember at one there was the trailer for Texas Chainsaw Remake, and then it's just like quiet, and somebody just yells out, "That looks good!" And it got like a huge laugh.
That's really funny.
House of a Thousand Corpses?
Yes.
That'll come up later this year.
My jam.
Boom. Final Destination 2.
My favorite of the Final Destinations.
I would agree with that.
Very, very good.
Wrong Turn. I finally saw that last October. Not great.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Wrong Turn 2 is better.
Yep. These two I haven't seen, but I've heard good things. High Tension. Okay. I know it's hit and miss with people. Tale of Two Sisters. I saw the remake, The Uninvited.
I never saw The Uninvited.
Okay.
I've seen Tale of Two Sisters.
Yeah.
I like it.
Okay.
I showed it to a class last semester. They did not like it.
Okay.
At all.
Interesting. Yeah, so see, people crap on the 90s, but 2003, that's what you should be crapping on.
But there was a lot. Like,
I
think at that point, I didn't even think horror was really back.
Yeah.
Because Saw didn't hit till the next year.
Right.
And Hostel wouldn't be for another 2 years, right? 2005?
Hostel was January 06.
06, was it? Really? Okay.
Yeah, no, yeah, yeah. I remember the October 04 was a big deal because it was Saw right at the end and The Grudge was going on.
Okay. I didn't see The Grudge theatrically. I did rent it eventually.
The Grudge movies fascinate me because the
first... I never saw two.
The two is so depressing and just sad that it kind of sticks to me a little bit. I don't know. It's like Halloween 2, the Rob Zombie
one,
where it's just like it kind of sticks in your gut a little bit because it's just such a sad story.
Got it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not the worst lineup. Like, a lot of those movies aren't great, but there were a lot of horror movies coming out because I was going to see most of them.
One thing that's cool about horror, besides everything,
is
that even a lineup like this, these are still memorable movies.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, no one's going to remember, like, the blockbusters of 2017 or 2018. Just, like, we don't remember the ones. Where I'd have to, like, stop for a minute to think of what came out last summer.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else about Freddy versus Jason?
No. It's a great movie. See, that's the thing.
It's a perfect movie.
That's the thing about Freddy versus Jason is right after I finish watching it and I give it 6 hours... I forget that I don't like it, and then I go back to rewatching it like in a year or two.
Yeah, I mean, I can rewatch almost any of these movies, honestly. I think Freddy's Dead and Jason Takes Manhattan. I could probably actually have an easier time watching Jason Takes Manhattan than I can Freddy's Dead, but those are really the only two in either series, if you're not counting the remakes, that I couldn't rewatch at almost any time.
Yeah, Freddy's Dead I'll always have like a certain amount of affection for just because it was one of those movies that I was too young to see, but I was sneaking into for a few minutes, like when it was in theaters, because I was so fascinated that a horror movie was in 3D.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was the...
Certainly novel.
That was like right around like the year before my parents started letting me rent horror stuff.
Right.
So like, so it had that like allure to it. And I was looking at the Fangorias and stuff and it's got a Goo Goo Dolls song on the soundtrack.
The absolute best thing about Freddy's Dead is like the clip show that they do at the end with all the moments from the other movies. You're like, oh man, I like this series. I didn't like this movie, but
I like the
highlights.
I like the opening credit sequence where it's like a really long dream and he's like falling down that giant hill and stuff like that. I think there's some neat stuff in it.
All right. I don't like it as much.
All right, well, snarf.
Yeah, snarf.
Snarf.
Thank you guys very much for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course, this happens to us every year. We go to Flashback, we talk about a horror movie, and now we're ready for it to be October.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that article, like, really hit home. Yeah, my goodness.
I'm ready. We're just a few weeks away, so that's good.
Yeah.
But thank you guys very much for listening. As always, check us out at F This Movie on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook, in iTunes, on Stitcher. You can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com or check us out every goddamn day at fthismovie.com.
I want to close by saying, instead of the line that Monica Keena gives to Freddy as the kiss-off line in Freddy vs. Jason, where she says, "Welcome to my world, bitch," and cuts his head off.
Which is terrible.
I just wanted her to be like, "Stop calling me bitch!" We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.